I think they like you, Steve.
Thursday, okay? Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Well, Anna DeVantis was right. It is the Steve Cochran Show, and Steve Cochran is making his way in here right now. I am Mary Sandberg Boyle. We have Andy Mazur here for Dave Enick because Dave was out too late at our work party.
Yeah, I think he was.
Yeah, he was still here when I left.
Yeah, wow. So he couldn't make it in. That's actually a lie.
Yeah.
He has a Northwestern game tonight.
He does. Their first game of the year tonight in Indiana against Purdue.
But on the social media, we saw a lot of the employees ended up at a second location. So I like to think that Dave Bennett was there.
There was a post party.
Yeah. And Steve Grzanich is here. He was at the party. And there he is going over to his news desk.
Yes.
And Mary was here.
I was here back and forth four times. It was great.
Yeah, that's what we liked.
No, it was a great party. It was really fun to meet the clients because some of them you never see.
And you know what, Mary? You know? One of our best clients is Dick from American Weathermakers. And the best thing he said, Mary came up to me because I was wearing a name tag. And so she knew who I was because I think we needed more name tags.
Yes.
That was your thing all night. I mean, you were talking about that. You said, damn it, where are the name tags?
Yeah.
So. Well, where were they? They must have been at the front.
No, I'm there sure. were no name tags.
No Dick name tags.
Brought his own?
Dick had his own. It was an American Weathermakers, like actual.
I think it would have been funny if we were all wearing the name tags that said Dick.
Maybe they could have sponsored the name tags. Yeah. So.
What a smart guy.
So I didn't know Enid was, not that I'm not thrilled to see Andy, I didn't know Enid wasn't coming in.
Yeah, he's not here tomorrow, today or
Slacker?
Either, yeah.
What, has he got a game tonight?
Yeah, he's got some football game, you know.
It's a season opener.
There he is now.
Exactly.
He was so hyped up last night. He was just bouncing off the walls. He was so excited.
He was, and he left at the same time that we did at 7. Who
cleaned this place up?
Wasn't me.
I talked to Adam Phillips this morning, the overnight engineer, and he said he kind of cleaned it up a little bit.
It did not look like it was winding down. The party was supposed to go to 7, and it was still going.
Heard engineer Bob Ferguson was vacuuming.
Oh, he does it every day, so that's nothing new.
But this place looks better this morning than it does on a Monday, and we had 200 people in here last
night. Did you open the refrigerator, though?
leftover lobster balls in the front freezer, by the way.
Nobody's going to take credit for it. I did the cleaning.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Good work. Congratulations.
Yeah, until somebody else says that they actually did it, I'm just going to say that I did it.
If you have the lobster balls, get to a clinic as fast as possible and see a doctor.
I didn't even see any lobster balls.
I didn't either.
All I saw was Steve Grzanich eating bacon-wrapped dates.
Mm. Oh, I missed
bacon.
Those.
I actually caved, and somebody was saying, I think it was actually Mike Hillstrom from Chevy, was saying, you have to try one of these bacon-wrapped dates. So we were grabbing one because he was pressuring us, but then the photographer said, we need a picture. Put down those bacon-wrapped
dates. Put down those dates.
So we put them down, and we posed for a picture, and then the date person walked away, and so we never...
Ah!
the bacon-wrapped dates, by the way, there was a sweet chile sauce that you could dunk them in that made them even more perfect than they were.
The only reason Steve came back. You wouldn't see Steve here after 5 o'clock at night.
The bacon wraps, yeah.
Exactly. On the program, Chuck Todd's coming up, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady. I just spoke to Pat Brady before we got on the air. He's tanned, rested, and ready. He was here last night as well.
Yeah, he was putting away some of those lobster balls.
So he was watching Steve and John DeCoste do karaoke.
I was talking to DeCoste about it later.
There was a hip thrust by John DeCoste.
Yeah, and he could have broken his hip at his age.
Attempted moonwalk, which was not pretty.
Yeah, but here's the thing. DeCoste is on stage all the time. I'm on stage all the time. But there's nothing more awkward than being in front of 12 people doing karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
With our boss, who was heavy directing you.
You talking about Stephanie?
Yeah, she was
Stephanie.
Like,
yeah, she was
giving direction.
Was very concerned that everybody was having a good time. But there is the show on here. I think it's Saturday night. It's the Old Time Radio Show.
Oh, yeah.
What is it called? Old Time Radio Show?
Radio Theater. Right?
Radio Theater.
Yeah.
And the two people that do that show, you couldn't get them off the karaoke.
Uh-huh.
They were in there going karaoke crazy.
When I first arrived at the party, our boss, Stephanie, was in a dress and heels sprinting down the hallway, and she said to me, "Hi, girl, I have to go get glasses." And I thought she was getting beverage glasses. And then she returned running the other way again, and she was holding sunglasses for props for karaoke. But it was a sprint. This is
that to take
was
pictures?
After, yes. She wanted to put them on those radio people for their karaoke song. That I think they did Billy Joel.
We did I Will Survive. It was Stephanie and I. And Lindsay, who has a marvelous voice, yeah. Lou Manfredini's producer, Lindsay's voice is phenomenal.
I did someone else sing I'm Leaving. I don't know if you know that song. And we got to do the top six. Let's do it right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't get your kicks. With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
This is not on the top six at six, but I have a tennis question for you. The French woman who changed her shirt in the middle of a match yesterday, was she penalized or not penalized? Or was it just a warning? I mean, if you want, we can go live to Andy in Paris on this. I just know you watch a lot of tennis.
I do. You know, well, they brought it up. I don't actually know what the if it was.
Did she get penalized or did she just get a warning?
They were talking about penalizing her, but then I think they're changing the rules now.
They're changing the rule, yeah. Because
it was so hot.
Well, her shirt was on backwards.
Right.
And dudes change their shirts all the time. She's obviously wearing a sports bra.
Right.
So what was the big deal about her changing her shirt?
That's the thing. That's like the is it Julie Foudy that did it with the soccer match when she took off her shirt? And they the internet went nuts with all the guys with no shirts that sit there with no shirts. So
it didn't seem like a big deal. But I don't understand the whole thing about what women wear playing tennis anyway. If Venus Williams, or I should say Serena Williams, who was the greatest athlete maybe in history. She ought to be able to play tennis in a suit of armor if she wants. Right. I mean, who cares what she plays in, just as long as you get to watch.
I know the French Open saying that about her cat suit. The cat suit, which was designed to help her with the blood clots that she almost died from that you had
I'm quite
as well.
Familiar with, yes.
Yeah, so they were. And then there's a woman that wore a white cat suit years ago at Wimbledon and didn't get in trouble. So it's
I get that stuffy organizational folks who have sponsorship deals like the NFL will freak out if you wear anything but the NFL gear that they have licensing arrangements with. But the individual tennis outfit, along with your sponsorships, let them wear what they want to wear.
Yeah, and the
you
want
to wear a purple pimp hat? Wear it.
We have the LPGA this year saying that women's skirts need to be longer, and then we have in the women's tennis, they're saying you have to wear a dress or a skirt. Like, why they people think they need to weigh in is let us pick what we want.
Well, again, women need to say no.
Yeah.
Collectively.
Serena handled that well, though. She said that she has a great relationship with the French Open, and, you know, she has no problem with their rules. She's above, you know, getting into the petty part of it.
Yeah, she's Serena. Dom, again, the White House counsel is leaving his job this fall. There's a question of whether he was fired or left of his own volition. The news of his departure came as a surprise, allegedly, to Mr. McGahn. Who Trump didn't tell beforehand, according to people close to both men. We'll talk to Chuck Todd about that coming up next. Betsy DeVos is the education secretary, and she's putting together policies for the U.S. Educational system to bolster the rights of students accused of assault, harassment, or even rape, and to reduce liability for institutions of higher education and encourage schools to provide more support for victims. The basic premise here is the schools police the schools. The schools handle it themselves. That's all well and good, but I don't think the education department needs to get involved with criminal behavior. I think that needs to be dealt with by the cops and the other folks, the law and order folks. But I'm crazy that way. Son of an old school Chicago political power broker filed campaign finance paperwork yesterday to possibly jump in and run against Rahm Emanuel. That would increase the field of mayoral challengers. Let's go to the tote board. To 5,906, or more than a dozen. Jerry Joyce Jr., son of former 19th Ward Alderman and State Senator Jeremiah Joyce, filed the paperwork yesterday. The move allows Joyce to begin collecting campaign donations for a possible mayoral run.
And you say every time someone adds to the group, that just benefits Mayor Emanuel.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, automatically, we're almost positive we're going to have a runoff here, but it'd be very hard to defeat the mayor. Who, you know, I understand some people have some issues with, but he's done a lot of good things as well. And, you know, my theory, both of you, and especially you, Andrew, mm-hmm. you got to have a tough mayor in Chicago to handle the alderman. Otherwise, it would be like the chimps running the circus.
It's not a good thing.
Yeah. Taxpayer-funded mural at a CTA stop in Lakeview was reported as graffiti. So the city destroyed it. You know, I don't even know how this happens. Because there's a clear delineation. I mean, you're an artist. You take photographs as, and I don't know how many people know this, but mm-hmm. Andy's a wonderful photographer. And your website is what, by the way?
AndyMazerPhoto.com.
And if you go there, you'll see some of Andy's photography. Mm-hmm. But there's a moment before you destroy something where you stop. Yeah. Unless you're your mom. Like, your mom could take this and go, oh, I'm throwing this out.
Mm-hmm.
And accidentally throw something out that's actually artistic. But not intentionally. She's mom. She's just cleaning up and it's Saturday and you kids never take care of your stuff.
Too much clutter.
Well, in the city, I'm surprised they act that quickly because it wasn't even up very long. I think the artist said it took him longer to paint it than...
Yeah,
it was.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it. Did you?
It's a bright yellow bear, and it's called Bear Champ.
So and does it look like graffiti?
Somebody called. No. Well, I mean, it's pretty graffiti. Yeah, it's graffiti-ish, but it's pretty. But somebody called the 311 non-emergency number, and the city acted quickly, and it was paid for by taxpayers. So
that's impressive because there's graffiti that's I've seen at other CTA stations that has been there
for years,
for months and decades.
That does not even remotely look like graffiti. That looks like an art installation. That looks like a nice piece of modern art.
Yeah.
I have an obvious question. Are we the taxpayers going to get our money back?
No, of course not. Okay, right. But good ask, because if we did, we could buy more bacon-wrapped dates. Next, panic that strikes drivers who lose their GPS signal when they're on lower whacker could be eliminated if you use Waze. That's W-A-Z-E, the navigation app. Google owns Waze, and they're teaming up with Spot here in the city to install beacons along 5 miles of lower roads in Chicago, lower Michigan Avenue, lower whacker, things like that. And the beacons will send a signal to drivers' cell phones, providing a positioning alternative to GPS when they head underground. With their Bluetooth and Waze app on. Sandberg will back me up on this. There's nobody more confused about where I am at any given time than me. I don't have the GPS chip. I got lost in a parking garage where there's only one way to get out.
Nice.
So because of that, you would think I'd be excited about this. But honestly, I don't know. I understand how you could get lost in the Pedway. I don't know how you could get lost on Lower Wacker or on Lower Michigan Avenue or any other lower streets I'm missing.
Well, when you're panicked, reason goes out the window. As a person who's been down there panicked, I'm very excited about it.
You've been lost?
Down there, yes.
On Lower Wacker?
One time I called Super Joe because when we first moved to this building, I accidentally came out of the parking garage the wrong way, and I ended up on Lakeshore Drive going to Soldier Field, which is not where I live.
Well, like,
I couldn't get off of it.
This is funny because you also are GPS challenged, but this is how bad I am.
Mm-hmm.
You lead me.
I know. That's yes. pretty bad.
Yeah, that's bad. And then there's this. The Red Delicious Apple. Our long national nightmare is ending. The Red Delicious Apple, well, it's over. The U.S. Apple Association, a trade group, released its production forecast for 2018. It's the beginning of the end, said Tom Burford, who, by the way, is an Apple historian. How about that?
No way.
You're an Apple historian.
It's a great business card.
Orchard consultant and Red Delicious detractor. He says, how are you going to market a tasteless apple when the consumer has tasted so many good ones? Mr. Burford has a point. The decline of the Red Delicious can be credited to a shift in consumer preferences toward apples that are crunchier, crisper, and sweeter. I grew up in upstate New York. That's Macintosh apple country. Mm-hmm. So that's my preference. And I've not found an apple that I like better than Macintosh, and they're very hard to get in the Midwest.
Have you had
like
a Kanzi?
Honeycrisp?
Mm. Yeah. The Honeycrisp, I'm kind of over.
They're
those.
Overrated, I think.
Yeah.
The
what'd you, Kanzi?
Kanzi is like my go-to.
Spell it.
K-A-N-Z-I.
I'm writing that down.
Yeah. I still go with Granny Smith's.
Granny Smith.
I like the Granny Smith apple.
Are those the greenies?
The green
ones,
yeah.
Those are the ones you make pies with and stuff.
That's why I like them.
Yeah, you're supposed to make pies with them.
And those are the best ones to have caramel apples
little
with.
Peanut butter on it, too.
Yeah. Come
on.
What's the best just eating an apple? Nothing
Golden
on
delicious.
It, just eating
Golden
an apple.
Golden delicious.
I'm telling you, no, a Kanzi. You guys got to try
Where am I getting Kanzis?
I have one in my purse. I'll give you a bite.
Okay, but where would I buy them?
Oh, they have them at Mariano's, Whole Foods.
So every grocery store.
Yeah.
I don't have to go to an orchard to get this.
No,
they're grown in Kansas, Michigan, I believe.
Really?
No, I just made them.
Oh.
Like, there's no
You know what? I was buying it, too.
He sold it well.
Hey, and a texter said that they the from the 773 that they gave her a fine, but then they revised it to a warning, the woman at the U.S. Open.
Okay. All right. Thank God. Our long national nightmare of French Open outfits is our French outfits at the... Where are they playing?
They're in New York. This is the U.S. Open.
Yeah, it's the U.S. Open. Yeah. They're in Flushing Meadows. Yeah.
The Serena French Open news also came out last week, though, so that's why you're confused.
It's just a blizzard of fashion. Nick will talk to us next, but first, what's up at 6:30?
Steve, a new report this morning on how many times the Department of Children and Family Services investigated one of the families involved in the Little Village fire. That's at 6:30 from the WGN Newsroom.
Bunch of accidents in the suburbs this morning, actually in Hanover Park at Lake and 390 and Oaklawn at 95th and Southwest Highway, Gulf and Barrington and Hoffman Estates, Tui and Wolf and Des Plaines, and Irving Park, an accident involving a pedestrian at Elston and Pulaski. Otherwise, typical delays. The inbound Eisenhower is the worst, 50 in from 53, about 36 from Mannheim. Stevenson, 32 in from the Tri-State, the Kennedy, 32 from O'Hare. No delays yet on any of the tollways. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app, approved by the Mortgage Experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mira Vandeval, WGN Traffic Central.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
He is Nick at night, dear Julio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one. Who's in the know? I need to know what Nick is thinking.
There's a movie I want to ask Nick about that's out this weekend. I'm fascinated with World War II history. So as soon as I saw Operation Finale was going to be a thing, I've been sort of following the track of it. Nick joins us now, by the way, and good morning to you, Nick.
Good morning.
Operation Finale, what are you hearing?
Really good things about it. It's about this team of Israeli agents led by Oscar Isaac who track Adolf Eichmann down in Argentina and send a team over there, not to kill him, but to extract him so that he comes home, comes back to the country to stand trial.
And who plays Eichmann? And,
Ben Kingsley.
How good is that?
Yeah. So it's Oscar Isaac, Ben Kingsley, Nick Kroll in a dramatic performance is in the film too, and I hear really, really good things. It's interesting that that they're releasing this movie like at the end of August, because normally the end of August is
dump time,
is a time where you dump terrible movies,
yeah,
and not something that, you know, you would think this movie would have been released in the fall or November or something at the time when all of the Oscar, you know, films were coming out. But it's an interesting time that they're releasing this in, and I hope it finds an audience.
Ken.
Ken is a science fiction movie about a kid who finds an alien weapon and his ex-con adopted brother, and he go on an adventure to stay away from the aliens that want it back and the drug dealers that want to kill his brother.
Oh, so that old story.
This is like you and Mickey growing up.
Oh, totally. Yeah, I remember that time when Mickey and I found the alien weapon and we had to stay away from stuff.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
Us.
And incredibly, Dennis Quaid and James Franco are in this movie. I don't know how that happened. They lost a bet.
Don't you have a sense? James Franco is so close to leaving the white lines. Don't you have a sense that he could just spin off and maybe we never hear from him again and he'll be one of those? Whatever happened to James Franco?
Oh, I totally. And he does, you know, like, I mean, everybody knows, like, the guy, you know, directs movies, and he directed The Disaster Artist last year, which was a really good and funny movie. But he, like, does, like, straight-to-video crap all the time. The guy doesn't know the word no.
He also does, well, listen, there's stories about him that may or may not be true, but he has hobbies that I think are troubling. I didn't ask you, what'd you take your parents to see? You take your parents to see a movie every weekend, what'd you take them to see?
Oh, God. You saw the Happy Time Murders.
Oh, this is the Muppets Puppets do porn thing?
Yeah. And, you know, not funny. I just not even remotely
like over
funny.
The top, stupid, and not funny.
But the thing is, it's like they just, you know, it's all kinds of bodily fluid flying out of puppets, and they're all kinds of swearing, they're saying the F-bomb, they're killing people, they're getting their heads blown off, and there's nothing witty about what's written. It's just, it's supposed to be funny because it's puppets. But you got to write funny stuff.
Look, it's just a hack. It's a total hack move.
Yeah, the guys from South Park made a movie with marionettes called Team America, which was brilliant. Brilliant and really funny. But this was just lazy. It's like, hey, watch a puppet say the F-bomb. Isn't that hilarious? No, it's not.
And who made it?
It's Jim Henson's company. His son directed it.
Yeah, I mentioned, is there some Freudian thing going on here where this is a slap back at dad or something?
I really don't know. And I was really looking forward to this because, you know, it came from the Henson company. And I'm like, oh, this could be really good because, you know, the Muppet stuff is brilliant and really funny and really awesome. And this has none of it. You know, who's responsible for actually making it is Melissa McCarthy and her husband.
Yeah, which is too bad.
She executive produced it and, he appears in it in one scene, and it's awful. I mean, I didn't laugh the entire time.
And I don't get it with Melissa McCarthy. I mean, she knows what's funny and what isn't, and she could see this and see that it's not.
Well, we don't care if you laugh. Did your parents laugh?
No, nobody. We all walked out and said, wow, that was a piece of crap. quoting my dad, by the way. I'm quoting my dad.
Yeah, well, I know your mom doesn't say that. What's angering you this week?
You know, there's no originality. We've talked about this a million times. There's not a lot of originality in Hollywood, and it's really starting to show on TV because there have been so many ridiculous remakes and reboots. Let me just tell you what's on TV right now.
Okay.
That's in prime time. American Idol is coming back, being rebooted. Battle of the Network Stars is coming back.
Let me just speak on behalf of the rest of us. We don't need that.
No, we don't.
I'd rather watch reruns of the original.
Oh, yeah, with Gabe Kaplan and
Telly Savalas.
Telly Savalas, exactly. Charmed is being rebooted. Dynasty is coming back again. Fear Factor is coming back. And we have game shows that are in prime time right now. The Gong Show is back on, Match Game, Pyramid, Love Connection. The Joker's Wild, hosted by Snoop Dogg.
It's just ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
And then we have a reboot of the Jetsons. The Munsters are being rebooted. Of course, we all know Murphy Brown's coming back, and the success of Roseanne, which lasted for a little while.
Well, here's the thing, too. You and I know that there are warehouses in Los Angeles filled with original scripts and original show ideas.
Yep.
Why go to all the old stuff? It worked once, so maybe it'll work again. I don't have to take any chances.
I think that's what it is. And after the success of Will and Grace, they brought Will and Grace back, and Roseanne until what Roseanne Barr did.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're it's like, okay, let's bring it back. It's a known quantity. That's why they're bringing back Murphy Brown. Magnum P.I. has gotten rebooted. That's coming back.
I'm with you. I'm angry now as well. Stand by for Chuck Todd. Before we get to that, Back to the Future Part 3, Tuesday, September 11th at the AMC Rosemont 18. How do we get tickets?
AMCtheaters.com, and it's the final film of our summer-long Zemeckis Fest, and it's been a blast.
All right, buddy. Thank you. That's Nick DiGilio. I'm friends with the
monster. Oh, he's a monster. I'm sitting there tweeting. Monster. Big, big, big tweeting.
Monster. I love you. It's a guy, but I love monster. You.
643, the number one Washington Nationals fan. And he's thrilled about Aaron Rodgers' new Packers deal.
Mm-hmm.
Is my friend Chuck Todd from Meet the Press, the 1947 podcast, and MTP Daily. Is Aaron Rodgers giving you any of his money?
Here's what I want to do. I hope to pay him money someday. I think he should be a Meet the Press contributor in the off season. I'd make him a contributor. So I actually think
he should
a little bit more.
I would love to see the meeting where who nobody tells Chuck Todd what to do, but I'd love to see the meeting where Chuck Todd sits down with NBC News executives and explains why Aaron Rodgers is on Meet the Press every week.
Yeah, right. Oh, no, I think they would. I think they'd be okay with that.
Oh, yeah,
Aaron Rodgers agreed. Come on, it's Middle America.
I will tell you this. The average bag of upscale cheese curds in Wisconsin is $7. He can now afford 5 million bags of cheese curds every season. Huh? How about that?
Well, it's going to be the tariff war with Canada, so he's going to need the extra money.
That's right. Cheese curd price is going through the roof.
Way through the roof there. That's going to be a problem.
Meanwhile, for people that didn't see Meet the Press last Sunday or haven't seen you this week much or heard from you this week much, you got a favorite McCain story you're telling folks?
Oh, there's a lot. I think my favorite thing about these remembrances of John McCain are the fact that my story, my first interaction with John McCain, is so similar to everybody else's first interaction with John McCain, which to me says a lot about him. For a lot of us young reporters in Washington, in different ways, John McCain was the first big-name person that would take our questions. you know, a lot of times when you're the young cub reporter, cool. you're the young reporter, you're yeah. Bigfooted all the time. So that yeah. my first time, I got him to do an internet chat at the Republican convention in 96. I was working for a political website. We just started it called Politics Now at the time. And for what it's worth, this was the internet 1996 chat interview. I have McCain sitting next to me. I'm at the computer. We're taking questions, and I'm typing the answers for him. And he goes, "All right, scumbag, let's do this." You know, that type of thing. And then, you know, and that's like the first time. You know, here I am. I'm literally, this is 24-year-old me. You know, and I'm like, my God, John McCain just said, yes, he'd do this. Back then, the only people online were libertarians.
Yeah,
the
five
libertarians.
How about that?
So it was.
That's a great story.
But the point is that every reporter I've of my generation has a similar story where basically the first time a serious, Jake Tapper will tell you this, one of the first sort of, I think, you know, big time politicians to take him seriously, John McCain.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I think anybody that had a personal experience with him on any level, including just having the opportunity to shake his hand, has fond memories.
Unless, a snob. That's the beauty of this guy. He just wasn't a snob.
Exactly.
He never looked down on anybody.
Yeah.
He didn't look down on anybody.
Yeah, totally agree.
Anyway.
I heard something amusing this morning. Ari Fleischer, who I've had generally good experience with over the years, was on Fox this morning and complaining about five mistakes CNN has made about Donald Trump, mm-hmm. a guy who has been a confirmed liar 5,000 times. And by the way, of those five mistakes, CNN, to my knowledge, corrected yeah. four of the five and is claiming the other one is still true. So that scorecard pretty much in favor of the media, if you ask me.
Well, look, this is just part. I mean, it's sad to see Ari Fleischer participating in this,
I agree.
In what this is. This is a campaign to look. This has been a 40-year campaign to delegitimize the mainstream American press. Right? I could go through the history of this. It all started essentially with a whole bunch of Nixon foot soldiers who believe it was the press that somehow drummed out Richard Nixon, not Richard Nixon committing crimes. And who was a young Nixon foot soldier back then? Roger Ailes. Right. And he created the machinery.
Right.
Today that is, you know, he built an entire he built an entire media organization based on attacking news organizations. I mean, if you really look at it,
that's absolutely true.
You know, the heart and soul of that media organization is through that. There are some there are some people over there that practice good journalism. Don't get me wrong. But what was the intent of the organization? Right. It was to essentially convince people that the professional news organizations were not, you know, we're fake or we're biased or some form just because they told you so.
I still feel like
you say it long enough for 30 years.
Yeah.
Say it long enough for 30 years. And, you know, there you go.
Traction will happen. I still feel like if Roger Ailes were still alive, he'd at least pick up the phone of Trump and go, "Hey, dial it down, Big Mouth." You know, you're
it's
even
true. I don't think Roger Ailes would be signing off on some of the things Tucker Carlson's done.
Yeah, completely.
I actually think that, yeah.
All right, so a couple of things that are, as far as I'm concerned, vitally important this morning. One is, the normalization of the outrage that we have. I get it. People are numb to so much now because it's the crap that gets stirred up every day. But we had 1,000 more people die in Puerto Rico than died from Hurricane Katrina. And by the way, the anniversary of Hurricane Katrina is this week as well. And the president has said nothing. And yesterday repeated the fact after the new death toll was announced, said we did great. What the hell? How is that okay?
I don't want to just make the president accountable on this. I'm disappointed in the entire elected leadership of government on this. Okay? You know, I would say this. I feel like about three people every day wake up and worry about Puerto Rico that I've noticed in political Washington. Marco Rubio in Florida, Luis Gutierrez, your congressman there, yeah. one of your congressmen yeah. there in Chicago, and Nydia Velazquez, a congresswoman in New York City. Now, Nydia Velazquez and Luis Gutierrez are Puerto Rican, and Marco Rubio has a lot of Puerto Rican constituents. So in some ways, these are the representatives that Puerto Rico doesn't have representation, essentially, right? Powerful representation. So they have to reach out to people who have, you know, who have connectivity to Puerto Rico. But where is everybody here? It's not just the president.
You're
no
right,
doubt
you're
he
right.
He could lean into it. But we have just sort of, because it's an island, it's not a state. You know, I hate to say this, but let's be frank here. Let's quote John McCain. Let's have some straight talk. If Puerto Rico had an electoral vote, do you think the power would have been restored quicker?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do you think if Puerto Rico had an electoral vote, do you think there'd be more people screaming to the federal government and do something about it?
Every day.
Exactly. I have to tell you, the best case for statehood has taken place over the last year. If I lived in Puerto Rico, it would be like statehood. It's the only shot we got.
Because, right.
You know.
Otherwise, what
government can't act independently?
Yeah, otherwise, why be American citizens?
Why be American citizens? What's the point? If you're not going to get treated like an American citizen in a time of need like Hurricane Maria, then either, you know, it's either independence or statehood, because this Commonwealth business is not serving Puerto Ricans at all.
And
let's be realistic. They're not treated as equal citizens.
And while the Mueller report continues to cook and the Trump meltdown on Twitter continues, I think there were 30 tweets yesterday, he also incited violence publicly after a tape picked him up a couple of days ago. Yesterday talked about how if Republicans lose the midterms, there will be violence in the streets started by Democrats. This is the president of the United States. And again, nobody stood up and said anything. Talk about leadership. You know, Mitch McConnell apparently is still in the witness protection program. Paul Ryan, who's not gone yet. Nobody says anything.
No, you're right about the numb, right? Everybody, and look, it's my instinct. You know, look, there's times where he's just the mumbler. You know, he's no different than, you know, the guy. There's a guy that's been holding up a sign protesting the federal government across from the Naval Observatory where the vice president lives,
mm-hmm.
essentially for the entire 20 years that I've been traveling down that road in Massachusetts Avenue,
mm-hmm.
claims he's got, you know, the CIA has implanted the radio waves, you know, of course, in the teeth somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
Right, you know, and I actually think there's too many of our elected leaders sometimes just walk in the same way you walk past that person really fast, right? Because they're yelling at you like, oh, my God.
It's unpleasant. You want to look away.
You want to look away. I feel like that when the president tweets some of this crazy stuff and ridiculous stuff and made-up stuff, you know, we're so, everybody is exhausted from calling it out. So you're just like, yeah, hurry up, walk faster, hurry up. You know, if you walk faster, you won't hear it anymore. Right. And that's been the Paul Ryan method, you know, right. Stick the head in the sand and just walk away. I get it. I get the instinct. But the thing is that confronting it, what good has that done? Too, when you call it out in which it hasn't had any desired effect, because when you call it out, you want others to do something about it. But if the elected leaders are going to do nothing about it, then what do you do, right? So we're in this sort of vicious cycle. I don't have the right answer, but I know that this coverage of the president and this Twitter feed isn't working.
Yeah, and I look, every day the presidency is debased. And if you think he just snaps back at some point because there's not a lunatic in the White House, it's going to take a generation to fix this damage.
Yeah, I really think we're lowering. I agree. I think we've lowered the bar of what is respectable decorum in American politics. I've seen it. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not going to name names, but I think this has been, let's just say, one of the lower class election cycles I've ever observed, and I'll just leave it at that. Just the amount of antipathy, the lack of treatment of people, you know, that disagree with you with respect. You know, there's still some good people out there doing it the right way, but the permission slip that the president is given to act like a jackass. And to have it rewarded, not punished. I mean, just look at that clown show that was in Arizona with the Arpaio and Kelly Ward. Like, the fact that they got, I love that Eric Erickson tweeted this, how the heck are there 35% of Arizona Republicans who think either one of those two people is stable enough to be your neighbor, let alone a United States senator?
Yeah, no, 1,000%. Aaron Rodgers, $35 million a year average. It's probably more than that.
He could buy a ticket, a beer, or a soda, and a brat for all 81,000 people at Lambeau Field for four games this year.
By the way, knowing Aaron Rodgers, he might actually do it once. All I want is one, give him one shot at Brady. Give him one shot at Brady. Please give him one shot at Brady McCarthy. Don't screw this up, Mike McCarthy. Don't screw this up. Sorry,
it's just a boy in his dream. That's all.
It kills me that Tom Brady. I'm glad he's becoming a weirdo because Aaron Rodgers is not as weird as Brady. So maybe history will be kinder to Aaron Rodgers and people will realize, yeah, he was more normal and he probably was a better quarterback.
Wait till they roll out his trainer and his special diet he's on. Then you're going to hear.
All right.
By the way, Packers Bears opening night. Oh, we are tanned, rested, and ready in Chicago.
You know, your Bears are going to be so much fun to watch. They're going to be a fun. They're probably going to finish last, although I think they're going to finish ahead of the Lions.
Yeah,
great. They're going to be fun to watch. Yeah. You know, you're not quite there yet, but it'll be fun.
I'd hate to see your Packers lose twice to the Bears this year. That would hurt me because you know.
I always have hated the Vikings more. I can't get worked up about the Bears because they've not been good most of my life.
Yeah, I understand. We'll see you later.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it. That's Jack Todd from NBC News. Pat Brady is here, and Pat, you and Eric Edelstein will kick some stuff around with me next hour, but I did want to mention this, if you don't mind, that you have received what I consider to be quite an honor. You've been invited to the McCain funeral in Washington.
It is quite an honor, and Leader Jim Durkin's going out, a couple other people from Illinois, Bill Strong, who was a big friend of the Senator McCain's, and actually I think he was on the board at the West Point. So quite an honor.
Yeah, I mean that's gotta make you feel pretty good, I would hope.
Yeah, and I get the opportunity. My son Patrick's in school out there, and I'm going to take him with me, and he'll get to see this firsthand. We'll go to the Rotunda, and then go to the National Cathedral. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
So congratulations, and it sounds weird to say that, but I know McCain would get it.
Yes, he would. He was a funny guy.
This is what primaries are all about. Have the voters examine the candidate and make up their mind. In New Hampshire, they examine them very carefully. Guy in Manchester said to another guy in Manchester, what do you think about John McCain for president? He said, I don't know. I only met him twice.
I'm going to need to have him over to the house, spend some time with him.
Yeah. Listen to Pat Brady.
Listen to Pat Brady.
Oh, boy, we shouldn't play the theme because then Edelstein's going to come in here and pout about the fact that he doesn't have his own theme song. Go ahead, crank it up.
I talked to the...
You talked to Edelstein?
No, I talked to John. He told me there's another song in the works.
For Eric?
He gave me a preview.
Okay.
He said it's as long as Stairway to Heaven.
I don't think... I'm not sure it's going to satisfy, though, because from my understanding, it's a...
It's about both of them.
Kind of a match of the two of you. So he's not getting his own. So there'll be Pat Brady has his own, and then Pat Brady will have a Pat Brady and Eric song.
So it's really about your ego.
Well, this is W. Pat Brady, right?
And Pat already told me that he's going to pay me to not play an Eric song.
Oh, well, there you go. It's all working out.
Reverse payola.
Pat, what's your company?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
Eric Edelstein will join us here shortly, but can you update us on the governor's race, if there's any news there?
A lot of commercials flying on both sides, and because Eric's not here to give the Democratic side, I think the Democrats, a lot of them think that this is a lock, but I think the governor has had a pretty good week or a couple weeks getting some legislation signed and into effect, and had some pretty effective commercials pointing out the differences in the two candidates. But Democrats think it's over, but I think a lot of Republicans, I've seen some internal polling, shows it's still a pretty tight race.
You have to want it, and you have to want to win it. What is your sense of the Rauner campaign? Are they fired up about this, or where are they at?
I think they're in pretty good shape. I talked to the young woman that's running the campaign, who actually ran Betsy Akeley ran Ron Johnson's campaign up in Wisconsin, and everybody for months said Ron Johnson, the senator up there, was going to lose. And I think the one takeaway that would be interesting to see what Eric thinks, after what happened on Tuesday, like in Florida, where this guy that ended up winning the primary, he was down 15 points 4 weeks ago and wins by 20. You can't listen to polls because they have not been right.
Right.
And all the prognosticators have been wrong. I think there are a lot of people that maybe are supportive of some of the things the president does but don't like him personally, that won't admit to a pollster they're going to vote for Trump. I think that's what happened in the election, particularly suburban.
In 16, yeah.
Yeah. So I I think there's a lot of uncertainty. It's going to be a very exciting, probably a very nasty 70 days, but I think both the campaigns are geared up.
What's going to be the key thing that people vote either for or against the current governor or for or against Pritzker? What's the...
Well, the Democrats will say he's a failed governor. You're seeing that in the commercials, and I think what Governor Rauner is going to say every day 100 times for the next 70 days is J.B. Pritzker is going to raise your taxes.
And J.B. Pritzker is a Madigan shill, and Rauner is trying to fight Madigan.
Yeah, that's the subtext of it. But I think the tax increase is going to be the thing that they're just going to drive home every day. Taxes, Madigan, and corruption.
We haven't heard much about, and as a matter of fact, the texter just brought this up. We haven't heard much about JB's income taxes.
We didn't pay any state income tax in 2014, so I think you're going to hear about it.
Yeah. So is that teed up?
Yeah, it's teed up. In fact, the commercial that just came out, it was a web ad that came out, I think yesterday, pointed out that he didn't pay any personal state income taxes in 2014, but he wants to raise your taxes. So, again, it goes back to the stuff on Astor Street where he got the tax, $250,000 tax cut by ripping the toilets out of his second mansion. I mean, it's all about taxes.
Yeah, so let's remind people, this is an expansion of his first manse, and he buys a second place, but the property tax bill is coming. So he takes the two toilets and rips them out. How many?
Five.
Five toilets?
Mm-hmm.
He takes five toilets and rips them out so the place can be declared uninhabitable. And then he has to get a $256,000 refund in his property taxes. I think, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was a refund. But the thing is about the taxes, there's a certain pool that the tax man's going to take. So he didn't pay his $250,000, but somebody else in the county ended up picking up the tab.
Right. And he has literally had 15, 20 chances when people have gotten to him with a microphone to explain it. And he never has, other than to say he didn't break any rules.
Right. And he says everybody else does it, which to me is...
That's like a 12-year-old.
Yeah.
Everybody else is doing it.
It's certainly not leadership.
So, one texter says, I'll vote for Rauner again, so at least we could have another chance to break the Madigan system. I know a lot of people who do feel that way. However, I'm just thoroughly unimpressed with how Rauner's run this campaign so far, and I think he's really got to get his act together if he's going to beat this machine.
Yeah, it's all, you know, for in Illinois as a Republican, it's always an uphill climb, and it's going to be a tough campaign, and most people would say advantage Pritzker right now, but we're going to have, I think, at least three debates and a lot of TV ads.
What's the temperature going to be at these debates? Because I know that was a topic of conversation in New York.
Yeah, you know what that in New York? Cuomo and Cynthia Nixon? Cynthia Nixon wasn't going to do the debate unless the temperature was set at 76 degrees.
Well, the problem with the Cuomo campaign is they're not getting very good advice. Oh, I'm sorry. Eric just walked in.
Texter from the 630, Steve, I appreciate how much you push to get out and vote, but each time you mention it, you ought to hammer home how important it is because the winner gets to draw the new map for the next 10 years. If we want change, that's where change will start, especially since King Madigan won't allow change through the legislature on the ballot. We'll start breaking down these races in particular next week. What this particular texter is talking about is the gerrymandering problem, but with what's gone on in North Carolina and Pennsylvania, I think you're going to see a national push to throw out a lot of these gerrymandering rules which benefit those who are in power to the X extent, because we can't count on the other party, whoever the other party is, gaining control and doing the right thing. Do you agree or disagree?
Completely agree, but I also want to clean up that mess. Eric's one of the finest political strategists in the country, and he's working for Cuomo, so Cuomo's lucky to have him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Hi, buddy.
Hi.
How are you? Oh, let me get your microphone on. That might help. And tell everybody where you work.
I work at AL Media.
The story we heard the other day, because I don't want to get into the Cuomo campaign because we don't live in New York, but for those of you listening in New York, I know you're entertained. Was there a discussion in the Cuomo campaign about whether or not the temperature should be set at 76 degrees for the debate?
I had not heard that. I mean, we've been part of the prep for the debate, but I know there had been back and forth, but I had not heard that detail. If that is, that's just ridiculous.
Well, both of you have been in 1,000 debates, and yeah, you'll never get that time back in your lives.
No. The prep is the worst.
I'm sure. What is the proper temperature for a debate?
If you're an incumbent, you would not.
Right.
You know, I think
the incumbent honestly should be able to determine the temperature of the room.
I do. I will say,
home game.
In all seriousness, the biggest discussion over the years I've seen in debates is height of podium and whether
right.
if there's a disparity in height, if one can stand on a box or not stand on a box.
Well, I remember that Dukakis and Bush won because Dukakis is 3'6" tall and they were concerned that he wouldn't look like a grown man.
Well, maybe you should put that army helmet back on him. That looked really
would have made him taller.
In an age, thank goodness that we're in, where you're getting more and more female candidates, where there is a lot of times physical disparity between a man and a woman.
Sure.
And women run into this double bind of having to be likable, but also look like they're powerful and all that.
Yeah, because
stuff.
A woman with volume is bitchy.
That's
a
right.
man with volume is powerful.
Total double standard.
Right.
So the optics of how they appear in a debate, and then, you know, totally unfair, you get in this whole other discussion, you know, a man's like, do you wear a blue tie or a red tie?
Mm-hmm.
White shirt or blue shirt? You know, but a female candidate, you know, what color is the dress and what does that say to everybody? And do you wear a pantsuit or, you know, it's just.
We've never talked about this, and it really goes to the core of both of your businesses on different levels. So I'm asking you to torpedo yourselves to some extent. But is there too much advice given to candidates today? Where you take the humanity out of it, you take the instinct out of it. I'll give you this question for me first came up when Bob Dole lost in 96 by a landslide and then went out and became America's grandpa and everybody loved him. He did commercials and was like, well, where was that guy?
Yeah. Well, Gore to some extent too. You
yeah.
know.
So do guys in your business, not you two, but do guys in your business advise candidates into some sort of robot like state where they don't
do well,
Eric advised him to do the ED commercials.
Yeah.
right. Not the worst choice you made.
That was a master stroke. Here's what I would say. I think yes. I think the difference is what you're always striving for is authenticity.
Right.
And finding the humanity in the candidate. And if you can find, if people who know Steve Cochran, right, and I convey you to the people who don't know you. And the people who know you say, yeah, they captured Cochran. That's him. In a way that's relevant to voters. Now, if you're starting to like stage manage and put words in their mouth and poll tested stuff that isn't authentic to who you are, then yeah, you run into this like that's not the candidate and it's just some two-dimensional caricature.
Well, for instance, in your company, which is one of the most sought after in the country, how do you stop that from happening? I mean, do you catch your own people sometime where you have to tell them to dial it down?
Yeah, and we say, this isn't authentic to the voice of the candidate. And who is this candidate? That's not something they would say.
Okay.
You know, find their voice.
So that's the center. That's the checkpoint always, to go back and make sure that you're being straight with that point.
Right. Now, you do end up in situations where the voice and the actual personality of the candidate isn't particularly compelling to voters.
All right.
So in which case, you might find a third party to validate them and maybe not have their voices.
You throw in a puppy and he licks their face.
Yeah, puppy some baby.
What about
smile.
A purple sweater when you had to go in the runoff? Remember the mayor?
What happened to that sweater?
It's coming out again, I think.
I think you returned it the day
after. No, it's coming out. It was Cochran's sweater.
You're really funny until the mayor comes in here.
I know. I know my car's going to be booted when I walk out of here. But you know, you say that, Steve, as we honor Senator McCain, one of the mistakes he made in South Carolina when he actually lost that primary, which he would have won.
Wasn't true to himself.
He wasn't true to himself on the Confederate flag issue. And if you read about it or see the story, he just cringed. He read the statement off a crumpled up piece of paper and walked away from the reporters. And that wasn't authentic McCain because he had just said in his victory speech in New Hampshire, "I will always tell you the truth." And 5 days later came down and took a stand that wasn't consistent with what he believed. And it wasn't the truth. And he went back and apologized.
By the way, his 106-year-old mom, and if you like John McCain, what he stood for and who he was, a lot of it came from his mom. His 106-year-old mom is going to Washington for the funeral.
Wow.
She got a speeding ticket on I-40 in northern Arizona. I think I read the story. I think I have it right, so I apologize if it's not right. But I think she was 97 and she was going 105.
Yeah.
And she went over to France once when they were kids. The kids were out.
Oh, is this with her twin sister where she traveled?
Well, there's another one there, but she went over there. I can't remember her name, her twin sister. And she goes over to France because they wouldn't rent her a car. Maybe because she was a woman. It was a long time ago.
So no, it was age. It was age.
She bought the car. She bought a car.
Bought
a car so she and her sister could drive around France on the wrong side of the road.
Well, her sister, they're twins. And Admiral McCain, Senator McCain's father, was asked once, because he was the head of the Pacific Fleet, he was asked, they're identical twins, he goes, "Well, how do you ever have a problem telling them apart?" And his response was, "That's their problem."
Well, he's a leader. 722. We'll come back with the MVPP and more with these guys. You got a question for Mr. Edelstein or Mr. Brady? Keep it to yourself. No, text us. 312-981-7200. That's the number. You can text those questions in.
Steve Cochran,
will you please report to the radio booth?
It's Steve Cochran from the Allstate Skyline Studio on 720 WGN.
That's pretty cool. The most valuable person on the planet. A daily search. We scour the globe, and when I say we, I mean Pete Zimmerman. Has he won an Emmy for this yet? How about a Pulitzer?
He hasn't. What is Marconi? Are those the radio awards?
Yeah, but in our case, it's Mark Coney. It's a guy named Mark Coney who just has some awards he issues. He's on a great one today. John Rice joins us now. John Rice was paralyzed in a car accident 14 years ago. He is a veteran. And he pulled off something that's absolutely astounding for anybody, let alone somebody with the physical limitations that he now has. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
First off, before I congratulate you on this very cool event, thank you for your service. Where did you serve?
Well, thank you very much for asking. I served in, from 1973 to probably 1985, and I was in the United States Marine Corps. Paris Island, South Carolina for boot camp, to Okinawa, to Camp Lejeune.
You got around.
To Quantico, Virginia, to Africa, to South America, Buenos Aires, Argentina.
You know, when I think about your resume there, it makes me think of my own. You're either very valuable or very difficult to work with as they continue to move you around the world.
I had several jobs.
Well, I can imagine. When did you become an expert marksman? Obviously, I guess that was during your time in the service.
Yes, sir. It started in boot camp in the Marine Corps. I was taught early as a young boy by my father. My dad taught me how to shoot.
And this major thing that we're telling you about here, which we haven't yet revealed, is something that John pulled off. John Rice, on a fairly crisp morning for summer, got to a targeting position that is fairly unheard of for anybody, let alone somebody, again, who's gone through what you've gone through. You pulled off a shot at 1,000 yards. 1,000 yards. You pulled off a shot that is very difficult to do. You got to measure weather. You got to measure wind speed. You got to have all sorts of considerations. And do I have this right, John? Even though you've regained some movement, you can't entirely pick up the rifle, can you?
No, I cannot. It's on a rifle rest, but I've got enough movement in my hand and strength in my finger to pull the trigger and to sight in. There was a special table built for me to pull my wheelchair up to and actually pistol grip and hold the rifle and sight in and pull the triggers.
John, prior to your accident, how often have you bullseyed 1,000 yards?
Actually, this is my first attempt to shoot 1,000 yards. I've shot out to 500 and 600 yards in my day when I was able to walk and had full strength and hunting for years also, but this was my first attempt.
By the way, kids, if you haven't done the math, I believe that's 0.6 of a mile, the shot that you took.
10 football fields.
It is. And it wasn't just one shot. It was a five-shot group.
Well, it's incredibly impressive.
So you have to have somebody over by the target to even let you know. That's like getting a hole-in-one on a blind, golf shot. You're not
Oh, yeah,
even
you
sure.
Got somebody verify.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're not
even
going to see it from there. Yeah. How often did you practice prior to this? Were you getting out and shooting a fair amount?
I've been actually practicing. My wife and I started this back in November of last year, but because of the cold weather and weather basically probably didn't start training actually to about March of this year.
You got incredible hand-eye coordination, and it's sort of, I don't know, it sort of makes you feel good just to think that even after your accident, that God-given skill hadn't gone away, and all you had to do was tune it up. So I know your next target is 1,250, and I don't have any doubts you're going to be able to do that as well.
That is the attempt, and so we'll be training as much as we can.
That's close to a mile, kids. Again, let me do the math for you. Samberg?
John, I'm not sure if you can answer this, but, you know, I know sometimes when you lose some of your things that you are used to, other senses become more heightened. Is there something since your accident, since you became a quadriplegic, that helped, you know, is it if you've been able to zone in better with your sight or the way you think about things? Like, have you... Has your body compensated that made you better set up to do this feat?
Not really. I've always had good eyesight, even though I do wear reading glasses. Concentrating, really, the answer basically is no. The only thing is, I'm left-handed, and I can't use my left hand or my left arm. So I had to retrain myself to do everything right-handed.
That's more crazy. Amazing. Yeah, because your brain doesn't work that way. That's amazing. John, you're some kind of guy, and it's a great story. And God bless your wife, too, because her support for this is one of the reasons it allowed it to happen. And, you know, it just goes to show, regardless of what you've been through in life, if you have an opportunity to reinforce your self-esteem, you're feeling good about yourself through athletics, through something that really excites you like this, it's a great thing. And you pulled off a feat that the vast majority, oh, I'd say 99.999999% of us in the able-bodied community couldn't come close to. So you're a heck of a man.
Hey, John, listener's asking what kind of rifle you were shooting.
I'm shooting a Tika 6.5 Creedmoor.
And for those of you who don't speak rifle, Google that. thank you, John. I appreciate it. Hold on, because we wanted to talk to you off the air for a second. But we look forward to talking to you after your next feat.
Well, thank you so much. And, yes, my wife is my rock, and without her, or Jesus Christ, I wouldn't be allowed to be able to do this.
There you go. Amen, man. Thank you. I appreciate you being on. How about that guy?
It's amazing.
We have four alleged men in the room, and then there's John Rice on the phone. We'll come back more with Eric and Pat in just a second.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN. Eric
Edelstein, Pat Brady are here. Now, if you go with my theory that you've got two guys who are going to spend $200 million on a job that pays $185,000 a year, and every day you get up and people tell you you suck, maybe neither one of them are mentally fit enough to have the job. So let's get away from the governor's race for a second, where you're going to be beaten over the head with ads for the next 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever the number is. And give me a little something on the attorney general's race, because this may be one of the more interesting races in the country, even though it doesn't get the same kind of pub, starting with you, Eric.
Well, we're working for Senator Kwame Raoul, the Democratic nominee, who is a guy that's been in the state Senate, actually took Obama's state Senate seat. And he's running against Erica Harold, a former Miss America. Two African-American candidates, two very smart people, a huge contrast in ideology. Raoul has been a progressive champion, fought for the rights of marriage equality and pro-choice and expanding health care to more people. And, you know, Harold comes from a much more extreme wing of the Republican Party, anti-choice, anti-gay marriage, had some controversial comments herself. But it's an interesting race. Both are looking like very strong candidates, and we'll see what happens.
In a race that is not front and center for people, that has this kind of interest, and it's an important office, obviously. Charisma matters. Kwame's not a charisma king. Erica Harold is very good on camera and very charismatic. Is that going to be a problem for the Democrats?
I don't think so. I mean, I think he's got a record of of accomplishment that's really strong. And I think ideologically, he's more in tune with what's going on in Illinois. And I think you're right, Steve. These AG races, because of the many ways, because of the Trump Justice Department, civil rights, voting rights, immigrant rights, environmental rights are sort of all under attack. And it's fallen on these state attorney generals to kind of band together and fight back right. against this. And so, you know, to have someone like Harold, who's kind of aligned with Trump and the Justice Department, isn't going to change much, whereas a guy like Kwame is going to take all that on.
Pat?
Well, just ignore everything Eric just said, because I disagree with him.
What?
Kwame's a great guy. I like him. But the difference is, and a couple things that Eric said, it's the attorney general. You're the lawyer and the chief law enforcement officer of the state of Illinois. Your political ideology, your political votes, your ties to Mike Madigan and the Democratic machine shouldn't be relevant. But with Kwame, they are. He's been down in Springfield a long, long time. I mean, he's a product of that machine. Where, as Eric, a Harvard educated lawyer, is a fresh face, somebody who said to everyone and at every audience that she doesn't owe anything to anybody. She will be the people's lawyer, and she won't make decisions based on politics. It's based on what's legal and good for the state. And I think that's why we need that kind of attorney general after 20 years of Lisa Madigan, Mike Madigan's daughter, who in a state that has, what, four of the five last five governors of my lifetime have gone to jail, she never prosecuted a public corruption case.
Lisa Madigan ever come back and run for anything after Mike dies in 1,000 years?
What's she going to run on?
I'm asking you.
Well, that's my point. I mean, as attorney general, a lot of people like what she's done, and I do to a certain extent on some of the issues that she's raised. But in a state like Illinois, where corruption's one of the top issues, she never prosecuted a corruption case. She's the only attorney general in the country that doesn't prosecute public corruption.
The thing I would say, and that's a good deflection from Eric or Harold, she has some shocking views. I will grant she's an impressive person. She's accomplished a lot. She has some shocking views. And there was a book published on Miss Americas, and there was a story related that when she was up for Miss Illinois, that they had given them a quiz, and they said, if there was a foster child, would you put them with a gay loving couple, or would you put them with known child abusers who were heterosexual? And she said, you know, and I respect someone's religious views, but I disagree with them vehemently. She said, you know, my Bible says that the gay lifestyle is wrong, is sin. So I'd have to choose the child abusers to put this child with.
When the proper answer is it's a stupid question, it has nothing to do with this.
Yeah, but I mean,
and how about this?
That's pretty shocking. That's pretty shocking.
Okay, and it's in the book, which she's denied. And she says her views are not that now. And that was when she was 19 years old, if she even made the statement, which she said she does not recall making that statement.
But here's the thing, Pat, if you didn't make that statement, wouldn't you say, I never said that? She said, I don't really remember that. I mean, that's just odd to me.
Well, I mean, she said that she does not recall making that statement. But more importantly, that's not her view now as attorney general. And again, the attorney general is the chief law enforcement, chief legal officer of the state. She's not. Her views on the Bible or what Mike Madigan thinks aren't relevant.
Well, that's true. It's true.
That's what she says. Even her views on social issues and other things, they're just not relevant to the job. Whereas what we've seen here in the last 20 years, what's relevant in the attorney general's office is what Mike Madigan wants done.
I think the problem, here's why it is relevant, because you have prosecutorial discretion and you can decide what cases to push when you want to defend the state and when you don't. And take a perfect example. If Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court gets approved, then they're likely to overturn Roe versus Wade. And then it's going to be up to each state and what they're going to do in terms of abortion, whether women are going to have the right to choose.
Yeah, but that's not the attorney general's job. That's the legislator's job. She'll have nothing to say about
that. But there's a challenge to HB 40 going on, and Lisa Madigan is defending the state and trying to keep HB 40, which allows women to have the right to choose. An attorney general could say, you know what, I'm not going to defend that law. And that's where your personal views, I think, do make a difference in when you're attorney general.
Going forward, we have the entire House of Representatives up. Normally, we can pretty much figure out a year or two in advance before the election comes up who's going to win. Any surprising Republican versus Democrat races for the House this year?
At state?
Yeah.
Without naming names or specifics, I think we might get a couple pickups down state.
Are you talking about Springfield? I'm talking about in Congress.
Oh, in Congress, I think the conventional wisdom is 50-50 at best for Republicans. I think most Republicans recognize it in some of these suburban districts where Trump is very unpopular. We're going to have problems. And unfortunately, some of our members are getting painted with the Trump brush, even though they're not Trumpies. So the president is very much hurting the Republican Party in trying to keep the House.
Is there a race in the state where a Republican should win and a Democrat's challenging, surprisingly, or vice versa downstate?
Not
I guess downstate,
downstate
versus
not, not downstate. It's, you know, Rodney, Shimkus. I know that Derek will probably have a different view, but Trump's pretty solid downstate. And not that these guys really lined up with Trump, but they haven't gone after him. So I think they're all in pretty good shape.
I mean, we'll see. I mean, there could be four or five that flip. I don't think it'll be that many. But
you mean in Illinois?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I think that, you know, the Roskam race here obviously is going to be a tier one race. I think Rodney Davis could have some problems. I think the St. Louis district could potentially be one.
But the Democrats and Mike Bost, I think, is a tremendous candidate, but that's probably your best candidate.
Yeah, probably is. So, look, I think that, you know, Pat's being generous, I think, on saying on the House flipping 50-50. I think some of the independent analysts, the forecasters, are putting it more like at a 60-40, 75-25 that Democrats win the House.
And when we come back, I want to talk to you about my least favorite president, even though I know both of you are big supporters.
Andrew Jackson?
No, Donald Trump.
Oh,
in just a second. And two things I brought up to Chuck Todd this morning, and just get your take on those. You know, whether or not he is going to influence this election in ways we didn't see coming 6 months ago, because I don't know if you know this, there's nothing but cowards in Congress.
That's not true. There are a lot of good people in Congress.
All right, make a list of them and we'll come back.
I will.
It'll take me 3 or 4 seconds to read it.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
I suppose we talk about this a lot, but it, unfortunately we have to talk about this a lot, and that is that there is a numbness in America to the outrage of Donald Trump, and the numbness can be very damaging, because the more you degrade the office of the president, what it means to be the president in the view of the world, in the view of this country, the harder it is to get it back. This week alone, and in the past 24 to 48 hours, the president has said if Democrats win, there'll be violence in the streets. And that is also goes along with not being able to say anything nice about John McCain until the VFW shamed him into it. And the other list of outrages that are out there. So what do we do going into these very important midterm elections, which are frankly just as important, if not more important, to your daily life than the presidential election? What do you do to get some positive impact out of the real state this country is in, as opposed to just looking the other way because it's so unpleasant to look at Donald Trump? Because we know their 35% is coming out.
Well, I think it's incumbent on people who want to take back this democracy and make a statement that kind of behavior, whether you're Republican or Democrat, is un-American, erodes democracy, and is not good for anyone. You got to come out and vote. And I think that...
So as Democrats, do you run against Trump, or do you not bring it up?
Well, it's interesting. It's sort of baked into the cake in terms of the voters that are motivated to come out. You don't really need to bring it up to them, and they do want to hear sort of positive vision and things that you're talking about. So, ironically, most of these Democratic candidates aren't going to talk about Trump because you don't really need to. It's sort of just part of the landscape. I think more important than the candidates getting the message, I think voters have to come out and say, we need to check this guy.
This is all about turnout. And I'm going to hammer this from now until November, regardless of what it does to me, because you have to show up to vote. And when 30% is an improved number, that's a bad sign. And that's really, we were stunned that we got 30% in the primary. 30% still seems 30% in Florida the other night for their primary. You have to show up for this midterm election.
You know, I remember those images in Iraq when they had that election and women were holding up the ink finger.
Yeah,
from,
yeah.
And
risking
that,
their lives,
that sort
to
of
vote.
Sense of pride. And I think that, you know, I think as Americans, we do have some say. I know for years it's this feeling like, oh, there's no difference and, you know, your vote's not going to matter. But I think democracy is precarious. And I think this Trump era has taught us that nothing's guaranteed. And if you want to continue with these freedoms and this future, again, I don't care what party you are or what your ideology is, you got to say democracy matters and we have to honor the process. So come out and participate.
Pat, what do you do about the numbness? And for Republicans who suck up to Trump and ride with him now, are they going to pay a price later?
Well, a couple things. This week, obviously, we talked about a lot this week, my admiration for John McCain and the way that President Trump treated him this week. I mean, one of his jobs is head of state, and he completely failed at that. And it really was a tough week for me and others that maybe think like me to think that this is the leader of the Republican Party, let alone our president of the United States. It was a very, very bad week. But the problem, I think, for the Democrats is, as much as they say they're not going to talk about Trump, their vision of the country is not necessarily, I don't believe, aligned with what the rest of the country wants. More government, more taxes, this kind of push towards socialism. I think the thing that's probably going to save the Republicans, if they can be saved in this election, is the Democrats just have not yet come together with a message, I think, that's compelling.
Yeah, talk about that for a second, Eric, because the Puerto Rican things, the other thing Chuck Todd brought up, the Puerto Rican story where we have a death toll that's 1,000 over the death toll of Hurricane Katrina. And I hit Trump with this with Chuck Todd, and Chuck Todd said, it's everybody's fault. Where are the Democrats on this? Where's everybody talking about the outrage that Puerto Ricans are treated like second-class American citizens when, in fact, they are full American citizens?
Yeah, no, it's. I don't think there's blame in one place. I think it's a horrible situation. It should never happen in America, and it has. And it's inexcusable for both
parties. And this is what you're talking about, where the president falls down in his role as commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
He set the tone on for both sides to get away with this.
Totally.
And the things that he did from the get-go, and he should be out there leading on this, and others will follow, but I don't think he gets the commander-in-chief role and the special position that is in a democracy.
He doesn't get any of it. You know, I mean, I remember in I think eighth grade, we had to do all the jobs the president is, commander-in-chief and head of state and,
right.
You know, head of the party and all. He doesn't get any of that stuff. But look, I think the most important thing is Americans have to send a message that he's not all powerful, that he's not in charge, that we are. And I think we have to do that. Now, to the Democrats' message, I agree. I've been critical of the Democratic Party. I think there has to be a much more cohesive message. And I don't think it's that hard. I think it's a clear message that all the boats can rise. And I think we're in this polarized moment where it's a zero-sum game. If you gain, I lose. And I think the American experiment is one that says if we help everybody, then everybody benefits. And so we have to get that, not to a socialist notion, but the combination of the free market and the government where, you know, evil needs an adversary and people do need some help. And
that's where my McCain's statement that he made to me was so appropriate and so timely, and he just said basically just that. It's not a zero-sum game.
Right.
We need to respect one another, and then things work out pretty well.
You know, it's the old JFK line. If we can't help the many that are suffering, we won't save the few that aren't. You know,
he had some pretty good lines. You write that stuff?
No, I was a little young then.
Okay.
The criticism of not liking the system or it being corrupt isn't a good enough excuse not to engage. You have to engage until something happens
you
with
know
the
what?
System that gets fixed.
But the negative ads drive down turn.
No, but I get that. But that's just an excuse. If you don't vote, stop bitching. Because you're just bitching. You're not doing anything about changing your world. You know, and it starts with everything from your local school board all the way to the White House. You have to be involved. And everybody's busy. Everybody's got lives. Everybody's got a Little League game. Everybody's got to take a kid to class, to dance class, whatever. Everybody has lives.
My kid this year, Patrick's 18, and he goes, do I have to vote today, Dad? I go, if you want to have a house to live in tonight, you better vote today.
I mean, one of the beautiful, I don't remember what context, one of the things they read that McCain had said or wrote about, it was almost like Whitman-esque, like about American democracy, how it's messy and it's not clean and it's this big rambling disagreement, but that's what democracy is, and we better embrace that. And you know, it's the old line of like democracy is the worst form of government except for all the other ones.
What's the
alternative?
Exactly. And the biggest problem I had with Barack Obama is too many times he was president of the Democrats, not president of the United States. The biggest problem with Donald Trump, and it's much more dangerous, is he's president of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He doesn't care about either side. And that's where we leave it. Before you go, you want to plug your brother's show?
Sure. My little brother, who's an actor, is going to be co-starring on a new NBC sitcom called I Feel Bad that debuts, I believe, in the third week of September.
And he has a face you'd all recognize. He's the guy.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
It's like me.
Until his name comes up. And also, when last we left you, because I haven't seen much of you this summer, your daughter was about to be a driver.
She is.
Did she pass her test?
She passed her test. I'm white-knuckling waiting for the insurance quote on what our rates are going up to.
$12 million.
But she's a very good driver, and she's doing great.
She's a good driver when you remember to leave the keys
Oh, yeah. Okay. I kind of stiffed her. I told her she could drive for her first time. You know that first time you drive by yourself?
Yeah, we solo.
And I set her all up, and then I took the key to work and didn't leave it for her by accident.
I have a feeling that wasn't an accident, even if it was subliminal.
Yeah, subliminal. Yeah.
So there you go. Gentlemen, thank you.
Hey, real quick, can I get a plug in, Lincoln Forum?
Of course.
Rick Wilson wrote a book on the Trump destroys everything he touches. Be March 19th. Go to lincolnforum.org. That should be a great one.
We have not had Rick Wilson on. Please invite him.
We are in the process of doing that.
All right, fine. I'll Thanks. Be over here. It's 8:02. We'll come back. Dean's coming up. News 2 in a moment on 720 WGN.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah,
live from the grill here on Moron Entertainment. It's my pal Dean Richards. Morning, Dean.
Steve, I'm up to my neck in pork tenderloins.
What does that have to do with the show?
How is that different from any other day?
That's what I'm talking about. All right, so you're cooking outside for Channel 9. What are you making?
I am making a variety of things. I'm doing my first ever recipe request line. People have been texting me with questions of things that they have trouble with on the grill, and they would like me to show them how to do it, or you know, just wondering about certain recipes. So far today, I've done kind of a sweet and peppery grilled shrimp. I've done honey mustard salmon on the grill.
That's what I used to call Andy Mazur, my little honey mustard salmon.
Dean, honey mustard salmon. I remember. I remember until HR got involved.
Yeah.
Hey, Dean, how do you? I like my salmon a little like on the medium rare side.
Yeah.
Is that how you're doing your honey mustard salmon?
Yeah. I mean, I don't overdo it because otherwise it'll be a little on the dry side. Yeah. I also like it a little on the medium rare. So, really, it just goes the piece of salmon, however you prepare it. I really just put like a coating of honey mustard out of the bottle, good quality honey mustard. I layer it over the fish, salt and pepper, and then the honey mustard. Put it on the grill maybe for like 7 minutes or so. You can tell the doneness of it by, you know, how it's jiggling around. Mm-hmm. Skin side down, though.
Jiggling around.
Yeah, the skin will stick to the grill, and then you just take a spatula, and it lifts right off of the skin. It couldn't be easier.
Sounds good.
I did a Greek-style halibut this morning, just with salt and pepper and lemon.
What's a Greek-style halibut? You dance around the halibut and yell opa?
And set it on fire.
Yes,
and,
exactly.
Actually, to try to boost the ratings, I yell Oprah instead of
right.
opa.
I think it's the right call.
Yeah. What else? I made three different kinds of pizzas. I made a chicken sausage spinach and feta pizza. Chicken sausage, you know, it's a little bit sweeter. It was delicious.
That now, are you bringing sweet. That by, or do we have to pick that up?
Oh, no. I have, like, Uber Eats bringing... I use all the very popular food delivery services for...
Don't you have, like, a bunch of interns running around who thought they'd have some real work when they agreed to be interns who could run that over here?
I always tell the interns this is the most important day in their broadcasting careers when they get to wash dishes for me.
You're going
to
look back at this day and say, thank you, Dean.
Yeah, you know, because they could work on the Rachel Ray show sometime or, you know, some cooking show. This will be an invaluable experience for them.
All right, give me one that people, you know, that's one you're particularly proud of that people would go, oh, I have to have that from Dean. What's one that you're doing or doing today that's that?
Yeah, we're putting the recipes all up on the web, so you can check them all out there. But I'm about to do three different kinds of pork tenderloin. I do a Greek-style one, of course, with salt and pepper and oregano and lemon. I'm doing an orange marmalade one, which is the one you want to try. Salt and pepper, cook the tenderloin on the grill.
Remember when Patti LaBelle did that song, Orange Marmalade?
Oh, Orange Marmalade.
Orange Marmalade.
Yeah, that was cool.
You cook it, and then right at the end, just like if you were going to do barbecue sauce, at the end, you put orange marmalade on the pork tenderloin.
Wow.
And oh my gosh, it's so simple and so delicious. So we've got that. I'm doing a barbecue meatloaf a little later on this morning. So I would, if you're going to do one thing this weekend, the orange marmalade pork tenderloin is great. You can't beat pizza on the grill. Any of the ones I did today are just a classic margarita with tomato and mozzarella and fresh basil. There's a lot of good eating out here at Bradley Place today.
Oh, that sounds so good. I like to throw a little crushed red pepper on my margarita pizza.
You know what I did? I grilled the shrimp, and then I made this honey soy sauce that was only supposed to have just a little bit of crushed red pepper in it. And I'm mixing it up, and I take the bottle of the crushed red pepper, and I'm just going to sprinkle a little in. The lid was unscrewed, and I poured the entire bottle of crushed red pepper into my honey soy sauce. I had to completely start over.
And then fed it to Robin.
That's right. That's what happened to my hair the first time.
So, Dean, I know that we're doing grilling with Dean, but this is more on entertainment, so I'm going to work this in from Very Cavallari. You know, Kristen Cavallari has her own cookbook. Have you made anything from True Roots yet?
I have not. Knowing your complete obsession with her, I should just look at the book.
You should. One of the recipes, though, I have some friends that have bought the book. She makes her own fruit roll-ups. They take 5 hours in the oven to bake up.
Here's an idea. Crazy. Go to the store and buy fruit roll-ups.
I know, but these ones are like no sugar. And,
yeah, they ruin it then.
Yeah.
Those aren't fruit roll-ups. Those are called things mommy made that I don't want to eat.
Yeah, here's an idea, too. Just have fruit.
That's a thought. Yeah. In 5 hours, you could grow fresh fruit. A texter says,
to California, go get some fruit and fly back.
Hey, come back. Texter says, good morning. Ask Dean if he's grilling Greek lamb chops.
I'm not doing any lamb chops today. I did a couple of times ago when I cooked on TV, I did some lamb chops. But, man, you can't be. I like the nice thin lamb chops.
Yeah. Oh. So do I.
With salt, pepper, oregano. They're marinated a little bit in some vinegar and oil, vinegar and lemon. They're fantastic. Much like the lamb chops that I know that Mary gets and I get when we go to Sea Study Hour restaurant, our favorite Greek restaurant.
They do. They've nailed the lamb chop there.
They make the best. I think they make the best Greek food, period. But yeah. Their lamb chops are pretty spectacular.
One last food question. We'll come back and ask you about a couple of show business stories. Are you grilling Hot Pockets at all today?
I should do a Hot Pocket segment.
Right.
I'll be right there.
As Jim Gaffigan says, Hot Pockets.
Hot Pockets. Super Joe wants to know if there's a Pop-Tart in your future.
Well, that has nothing to do with the cooking segment.
If he plays
his cards right.
Right. It's possible. And somebody also says suggesting spicy sweet bourbon glaze for whatever you're cooking.
Yeah, the pork tenderloin. That would be delicious.
All right.
I've done cherry glaze on it.
I love the cooking.
I do love the cooking. Yeah. I do love.
And do you have like a Muppet chef hat that you wear when you do this?
I need to up my right. I just have like a
the orange marmalade
apron.
Yeah, that guy.
My favorite Muppet character.
Oh, he's the best. Hold on.
That's how I'm going to do my next segment on TV. Larry and Robin, here's the food.
Orange marmalade. Stand by. More with Dean coming up. Come on. It doesn't get any better than that. It's the best. Friends have a brand new Smile Dental Implant Center. Back to Dean cooking outside. Somebody said you can grill Jell-O. Is that true?
I guess you can. I don't know why you would want to. Wouldn't it melt?
I would think. I'm being told you can grill pound cake, watermelon.
Pound cake.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Yeah.
Grilled pound cake is good?
Mm-hmm. I've heard about the pound cake, and I'm not a cook, I've heard about it.
You take some grilled pound. I mean, you could just take some pound cake and put a little butter on it and grill both sides of it very lightly until it's slightly toasted. Then also take some fresh peaches or fresh pineapple. Those are my favorites to grill. Throw those on the grill until they get, like a little caramelized and a little bit warm. Put those on top of the pound cake. A little scoop of ice cream. Call it a day, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a major show business story we need to think about today?
Well, mostly the Kanye West who snuck into town yesterday. I know he was hanging out at your house. Maybe you don't even want me to talk about this because
No, it's not a problem because as a fellow black entertainer, we do tend to get together.
I know that you and he and Chance the Rapper were all working on some new music yesterday.
Yeah, I know we were on GCI for a while.
Well, I wasn't going to mention that part, but as long as you did, Steve likes to hit the hot urban stations. What they do when the three of them are together in a recording session, Kanye and Chance the Rapper record a song, and then they have Steve listen to it, and if he likes it, then they go, okay, that's too white, let's do it again.
Right. The white check. Yes, and then they go back and add a little something extra.
Yeah, it's a white check. But anyway, he was the biggest headline of the whole thing is that he was talking about his incident when he was at TMZ a month or so ago and said that slavery was a choice. He's saying how much he regretted that he said that. This time he didn't try to rationalize it in any way. But he did, interestingly, he did say that he probably wouldn't have said it had his former manager been with him, who usually prevented him from saying stupid things. And not exactly blaming the guy, but he was saying that had the guy been there, that he probably would not have said that, anything like that. So that's your big Kanye West.
I guess I got to give them credit because I thought that he and Kim Kardashian would be married for about 10 minutes. And they've been married a while now.
Yeah, what do they say? There's a pot for every lid. You know, they both.
There's a Kardashian for every man.
They seem to complement each other somehow. So hey, if it works. Hey, speaking of marriages, big secret Hollywood marriage apparently took place this past weekend. Daryl Hannah married Neil Young, rocker Neil Young.
Were his mutton chops there?
Yikes.
I don't even want to, I can't even have a visualization of that in my mind. Not while I'm cooking, anyway. They had a secret marriage in San Luis Obispo, California. The only two celebrity types who were there were Stephen Stills and Joni Mitchell. As a gift to everybody who came to the wedding, Neil and Daryl, gave all of the guests little heart-shaped lockets with their picture inside of it.
Well, okay. All right.
Yeah, who wouldn't want one of those? The lovely couple, they met in 2004 at an Alaska pipeline protest, which, as we all know, is the most romantic setting of all.
It's couples hot. That protest together stay together.
Yeah, it's very, very hot. There's no question. Yeah. And I understand they're honeymooning in the Dells.
Happy wedding. Congratulations to the lovebirds. She's 50 something and he's 70 something.
I have a Daryl Hannah story for you. When she was dating JFK Jr., it was when I was doing my meaningless scenes in Grumpy Old Men, the first one. So JFK Jr. came to visit Daryl Hannah on the set. So JFK Jr., Daryl Hannah, Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, and Anne Margaret are standing around with me in a circle, and they're talking about Elvis and John F. Kennedy. And there's a pause, and I looked at all of them, and I said, I got nothing. Anybody need water? It's like, how do I contribute to anything related to that story circle? I got zero.
Yeah, did a lot of people mistake you for it? Were you also there as John F. Kennedy Jr.'s stunt double?
Nope, they just thought I was some mope that could get him water, and they were right.
Yeah. I've met Daryl Hannah a couple of times. She was here on WGN, and she's a little different.
Yeah, she's interesting. Yeah, well, I don't know if you know this.
Marches to her own beat.
She was a mermaid. So,
Yeah, she was. She was in that Tom Hanks movie.
And she actually has, if you've not met her, she actually has a fin. So.
That says I was a mermaid?
Yes, on her fin. That's exactly right.
Is that like a membership card?
I believe it is, yes. And I have one story for you. Jennifer Lawrence, she was part of that nude photo hacking.
Oh, yeah.
That dude's going to jail for 3 years.
That'll just go to show you.
Stop passing out naked pictures of people. That's it. You kids.
The only other story that I have is, remember the other day I told you that Alec Baldwin was going to be in that Joker movie?
Yep.
He's now out of the Joker movie.
Because of what you said?
There was a big scheduling conflict, and he can't be in it. And actually, he tweeted yesterday, apparently he took offense to the fact that people were speculating that he was going to do Bruce Wayne's father, an eccentric, over-the-top millionaire like Donald Trump. He went out of his way to tweet yesterday that that would never happen. That would never, ever, ever happen. He would never do that.
Okay, settle down, Alec. All right, buddy, thank you.
I've got pork tenderloins to get to here, Steve.
Yeah, send those over as fast as you possibly can.
Right on the way. They're on the way.
All right, talk to you later. That is the great Dean Richards, or the Swedish Chef, depending on
first.
That's my point. Thank you, Dean.
Just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in.
How much money do you think you'll need in retirement?
Not much. 105? 500? A lot. If you have kids and all that, they're very important. thousands of bucks?
Back to the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Bum, bum, bum. Social Security? Lots of basic questions about how to retire, when to retire, how much do I need, when do I know, how do I know, what do I know, what questions do I ask? And we asked Bill Geiger to come in occasionally to try to clear this stuff up. Today would be one of those days. Good morning, Mr. Geiger.
Good morning, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just enjoying the view of the lake out behind your shoulder.
As I tell every guest, we just put that in.
Yeah.
Just put the lake in.
It's a WGN feature.
Yeah, WGN Lake. Hope you like it.
I do.
Geiger Wealth Management. We'll talk more about what you do at the company here in a second, but this is what you do every day, and as I've said many times, you go to somebody to change your oil, in all likelihood, you certainly let the pilot fly the plane. Why wouldn't you go to the expert in the field when you talk about something as important as this? You're the expert.
Thank you, sir.
All right. So somebody came up to me playing golf the other day, and they said, next time you talk to that Geiger, ask him what age he should take Social Security. Is there a magic number on what age you should do it? Is it 62? Is it 65? And how do we know?
Well, there's two answers to that. There's the MBA answer, and there's a real-life answer.
All right, go real-life for me.
Okay, the real-life answer is when you're 70 years old, for the rest of your life, would you prefer a bigger check or a smaller check?
I'm going to go with bigger.
Right on. So if you don't need it, wait.
Okay.
That's the real-life answer.
And at 70, are you likely to get your max benefit out of it if you're relatively healthy?
Yeah, every year that you wait, your Social Security benefits are 8% higher.
Oh.
Up until 70. Wow. That's where it tops out.
I know when I was young, they used to tell us, we're not going to get Social Security.
When I was young. You're still young.
When I was younger. That was something they told us in high school. You're not going to get your Social Security. Is that really happening?
It probably won't be in the same form as it is right now by the time you get there.
But that benefit's not going away.
You'll still get it, but it's not going away.
So it's such a political football. There's no way it's ever going to completely go away.
The really important thing, and they may have told you this in high school too, is to save as much on your own and invest as much on your own so that if Social Security is there for you in a good way, it's icing on the cake. You've already taken care of that yourself.
We often talk, or always talk, about late 50s and early 60s, but Sandberg will be 40 eventually at some point.
And I'm 42 right now.
Oh, okay. And Andy turned 50 recently. They ought to be thinking about it, shouldn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, this is the time where you save as much as you can. Well, by the time you get to your late 50s, early 60s, which is kind of our wheelhouse, you should have more money than you've ever had in your life. If you're like most of our clients, the last thing you want at that stage is a big loss, and you're starting to think about, how am I going to pay my bills when we stop working? There's no more paychecks. And that's kind of our expertise, is helping people to transition their portfolio into pre-retirement.
So because Andy, here's the problem. Yeah. When you get old, Andy, and you can see old from there.
I can see old from where I'm sitting.
When you get old, you run out of money. That's a bad day.
It's a very bad, you know, it's a scary thing. I mean, cause to be honest with you, I never used to think about it because I was always a kid, you know, but now I'm 51. Yeah. It's like, this is a scary proposition, you know, that you think about it, you may not have it.
Let me tell you how you take that fear away. Is when you're getting close, your late 50s, early 60s, you take part of your portfolio and you use that to create dependable, sustainable income. Because if you have a check coming in every month from now until forever, that takes the scariness away. Absolutely. You can sleep at night.
And, listen, you deal with this every day. I found out, last few years, I had more than I thought I had. Mm-hmm. And I do fine. I mean, you know, I'm a lucky guy. I make decent money. But having said that, making decisions when I made them helps. But it's not too late, which is why we come back to your wheelhouse, your sweet spot, your late 50s, early 60s. So a couple comes in that are 57, 58, 59, whatever.
Right.
What's their first question?
Well, my first question is what would you like to accomplish? What's on your mind? What's concerning you? And to your point, sir...
Don't you call him sir. He's Andy.
It's amazing how many people mention that fear of potentially running out of money someday. You know, are we on the right track? Are we doing the right things? We don't feel like we really have a game plan. And... eventually, when the husband lets her, the wife says, and how are we going to pay our bills? When he stops working and there's no more paychecks, how am I going to pay the bills for the next 20, 30 years? So that's how the conversations start quite frequently.
I think there's also a wave going on now where kids are dependent on their parents much longer than...
That's a great point.
You know, right. Like Steve was when he was a kid. And so what's your advice to... that group that's looking at their retirement, and then should they help their kids finance homes or
change the locks,
pay off debt? Or
no, this is exactly where I am. I know, because that's a fantastic question.
So, Mary, you're in a position where the kids maybe need help, and you're wondering if you can do it?
Exactly. And you never probably, know how far to stretch it.
I'm going to get hate mail for this, but you probably shouldn't help them.
Yeah.
You keep that money in your retirement plan. You worked hard for it. You saved for it. You should have security for it. And sooner or later, the kids got to get serious. They got to move out. They have to start a job, and they have to start saving themselves.
Well, that's where the guilt runs in, because I know Catholic guilt, because I know my parents help me,
right?
You know, so I'm like, well, I really should help them a little, you know, especially student loans. That's what's killing these kids today.
And you can, as we found out, you can refi student loans, and there are other tricks you can do at the same time. But what you're saying here, Bill, is figure out what that amount of money is you need to retire and protect it, even from your own kids.
Yeah, and there's two messages there. Find out how much you need, but that's really a question also of how much income you need. You know, there's some TV shows and commercials around where they talk about what's your number, right? And then you see somebody walking around with $1 million under their arm. The real important question is how much income do I need to live? And can I do that with my Social Security if you have a pension around? But certainly, can I create that from my portfolio so that I know where the income's going to come from? That's the big deal. The 800-pound gorilla in retirement is not how big your portfolio is. It's how much income you have coming in.
So I have a sense of what you spend on expenses every month now and what you may in the near future.
Yeah. I mean, you figure out how much you're spending right now, and you got to figure that you need at least that much in retirement, probably more because you're going to be traveling.
Well, yeah, you've got time on your hands then, so you're going to be spending a little bit more.
You're going to travel, and you're going to be having some fun. So you that's why we say early 50s, Steve, or not early 50s, but late 50s, is it gives you a chance between then and the time you actually retire to build up that income stream. So you're ready. When you retire, you got a check coming in to supplement your Social Security, and it's like you still have a paycheck.
Tax here brings up a great point, and I'm sure you face this question every day as well. People go, well, I don't know how healthy I'm going to be. What if I have medical expenses I'm not counting on now that's going to eat up all the money? Is there some way to hedge that bet and protect your future in that regard?
Well, you can get long-term care insurance, of course.
And you should do that while you're healthy enough to pass the physical.
And while you're young enough to get some good rates.
Yep. But that's a big piece of it. What if you have passed that mark? It's just more important than ever, I guess, to have extra money set aside.
It is. And basically, when you're retired, you want to have that income coming in, but you want to be in a position where your portfolio is still actually growing, even though you're living off of it. And if you can do that by the time you get to the time where you might need long-term care, hopefully you've got enough assets, you can do it yourself.
Maximize your 401k at work.
Absolutely. As early as possible. It'll be painful for a couple months, but you'll get over it. And one day you'll look up and there'll be a whole bunch of money there.
And if you can do an IRA, do it.
Absolutely. The short answer is save everything you can. And be religious about it and do it for years and years.
It's kind of surprising you're any fun at all with all your logic.
Saving is difficult, but like Bill said, it's difficult for a few months, and then you get used to it. You know, like once it's you're always doing totally it, agree. You don't miss that you're not using it.
Let me tell you the fun part. The fun part is when we sit down with a client and they're doing the right things. We had a couple walk out of our office a couple months ago, and they kissed in the lobby because they're so happy that they had things lined up for themselves in retirement. That's the fun part.
There's no question, and I'm sure that makes a lot of sense. And I know you see this, too. A lot of people who just have their shoulders slumped from the weight of the world when they come in, and then they're walking out with a little spring in their step because you took the pressure off.
Well, people say they take the weight off their shoulders because they you know, it's relatively easy to make money, relatively easy to save money. The market's been on a tear for 9 years, but in the back of their head, they're always saying, yeah, but what am I not doing that I should be doing? So that's, and when they get that straightened out, when they get a game plan, that's where the spring, the step comes from.
I know one thing that we're talking about is we're making our plans for my stepdaughter's 14 and then my stepson is 11. And those 4 years of high school years are going to go quickly, and then there's college. And so I don't want us to be anchored in this house of space we don't need, paying taxes in a house, you know, too big a property when we could downsize sooner and use that money, put that into retirement. You know, a lot of people stay fixed in these giant homes, and their kids leave, and they have, like, nostalgia about wanting their kids to bring their great-grandkids back to their house, but that's a money suck, that giant house. Like,
yeah,
offload
be smart about
it. Let's go to a condo.
Sure, be smart.
Save all that money, so that way when we walk into Bill Geiger's office,
what's the sentimental value worth?
When we leave.
Right. Bill's never happier than when he sees couples making out in his lobby.
Get like a room, right?
Yeah. I think that's smart.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But people think about it after. Like, I'm real aggressive about thinking about it now. Those kids are going to be gone quickly. 5 years in kid term is like, blink of an eye.
Do you have any doubt that Pat's going to be fine because Sandberg's running his life?
Yeah, he's going to be okay.
Yeah, he's going to be fine. Interesting statistic before we run out of time here. Fidelity, and this is a statistic that Bill brought in, Fidelity says it has 168,000 customers who are now 401k millionaires. What does that mean?
It means they've got over $1 million in their 401k plans.
So these are the folks who could really maximize their security.
Steve, a lot of people don't know this. And if I could speak to that 149,000 sure. or whatever it is right now, what I'd tell them is, look, when you're 59 and a half, you can do something called an in-service rollover. And what that means is you can roll the money from your 401k plan into an IRA. 401k plans are a blessing and a curse. They're a blessing because one day you look up and there's a whole bunch of money there. They're a curse because there's only two flavors of ice cream there, risk and money market. And you're that close to retirement, you don't want to have big losses. So you can do an in-service rollover to an IRA. You can reduce your risk. You can create income. You can do a whole bunch of really nice stuff with that 401k money 5, 6, 7 years before you retire. So that's what I'd love to be able to say to those folks.
And regardless of how much money you have made or have set aside, everybody can do better in regards to planning for their future.
Sure. And Steve, if you have a game plan put together, it makes all the difference in the world. The rest of the years that you're working, you're not worried. You know you've got a path that you're moving down, and our byline is retire with confidence. And that's, you do that by setting up the income. You do that by making sure you don't have big
sure.
losses. And you can do that. You can be confident before you retire.
Last question before we're out of time here. We have long-term care. This is a texter. We have long-term care insurance, but it's constantly increasing. My husband's thinking we should cancel it because it's getting so expensive. We're in our late 60s. I know that's more of an insurance than an investment question, but any thoughts on it?
Not really.
Because no. They need to talk to their insurance person about their relative
talk to
their
health. Insurance specialist, yeah.
You sure you don't want to go out on a limb and tell them exactly what to do without knowing them? But good luck. I mean, that's a tense situation. Hey, are you a fan of reverse mortgages?
Pardon me?
Are you a fan of reverse mortgages?
It could be. Could be. Most people take a reverse mortgage because they haven't done the right things leading up into retirement. They're kind of running out of money. And that's why they do reverse mortgages. And if you're in that situation.
But if you don't have a lot of, if you don't have reason to sell the house right away and you got a lot of equity, maybe there's a little investment money.
You could. Yeah.
Nice to see you.
Good to see you, sir.
Bill Geiger, what's the number over at your place?
800-681-2498. And Steve, I'll mention, I think you're going to mention this also. Mm-hmm. The first five folks that call in to that number, we're going to give away a complimentary full-blown retirement plan to them. They have to have a portfolio of at least $500,000, mm-hmm. but we're going to give it away for the first five callers.
Find out how much security you really have in there.
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir. You got no idea how you're going to make your life savings last for that period that is going to be unemployment. Nobody pays you to retire, but Bill Geiger is going to show you how to pay yourself. They're going to sit down with you personally and get it done. 800-681-2498. As he said, the next five callers who've put away $500,000 or more, let's find out how well you are doing. You may be in great shape, but you may have some risk in there that's unnecessary. And together with you, Bill and his team are going to translate the complex financial planning process into easy-to-understand steps and a roadmap to help you get where you need to be. Call Geiger Wealth Management. Do it right now and get that complimentary, personalized, full-blown retirement plan at 800-681-2498. 800-681-2498. One more time, kids. Get on it now. 800-681-2498.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. You gotta go and get
angry at all of my honesty. If you're like, whose line is it anyway? Brad Sherwood's going to join us in a few minutes. He is going to the Genesee Theater in Waukegan, GenesseeTheater.com for the Scared Scriptless Tour. He and Colin Mochrie. Colin Mochrie may be the funniest human being on the planet. I love Colin Mochrie. He's tremendous. You know what Colin Mochrie reminds me of? And it's unfortunately a sad segue. Is Tim Conway. Tim Conway wasn't necessarily doing improv, but Tim Conway even looks sort of like Colin Mochrie, or Colin Mochrie looks like Conway. And that sort of, you know, you look at their face and you laugh.
Physical.
Got a funny face.
A physical comedy, right?
But Colin Mochrie's improv is tremendous. And so is Brad Sherwood. He's great. So Brad Sherwood's coming up here in just a few minutes as we head into the CLTV hour.
Speaking of comedy, if people want to see a picture of you and John DeCoste doing karaoke, if you go to the Steve Cochran Show Facebook page, it is the new profile pic. And we caught John DeCoste doing a hip thrust because you were doing Billie Jean by Michael Jackson.
Do I look less than interested?
You're doing that whole pretending to squint to see the lyrics, even though it was a giant screen, because you did it to please our boss, Stephanie. And then you tapped out, and then Domati, he went in and filled your role.
I can't decide who frightens me more, you or Stephanie.
That's a combo of the two of us when we're when we're band together against you.
Yeah, it's trouble.
Yeah.
It's total trouble. Am I doing the news now? You want to check with Stephanie, or are we good?
It's a little early for the news.
Yeah, it's true. 30 seconds after 9 could throw Steve off completely. We head into the CLTV hour here, and thanks for watching that, by the way. We just got some updated ratings, and CLT, a lot of people watching CLTV when we're on, so we appreciate that.
Did you see, I credit it's because we all look so good in this new studio.
It is better camera angles, yes. I can tell you that right now.
Good lighting.
If you have any old DVR copies of the Tribune Tower show, please delete them immediately. The Steve Cochran Show, celebrating the most valuable person on the planet, weekday mornings at 7:20. We're going to come back and start the news in just a second. I forgot we had another break. Good news, Steve. We're going to be right on time.
I knew it. I knew we were.
Yeah, back in a moment on 7:20 WGN.
From the Allstate Skyline Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 7:20 WGN.
Two of the funniest people on the planet, Colin Mochrie and Brad Sherwood, going to be at the Genesee Theater Thursday night, September 13th. It is the Scared Scriptless Tour. And if you love Whose Line Is It Anyway, you'll love these guys live on stage. Colin Mockery has filed a restraining order against me. He said you may be too big a fan, and you have to stay away from me, so he's not appearing today. But Brad Sherwood, I love Brad Sherwood. I love you, Brad. I love you. I'm not afraid to say it. I'm a man. I can tell you. I love you.
You will not need a restraining order. I am fine with all of your adulation and man love, Steve.
Love, yes. Do you love me as much as I love you?
Yes. I love you because you're at WGN, and I grew up in Chicago. So every time I hear those three letters, I think of, you know, fond memories like Bozo Circus.
Sure.
And the grand prize game. Sure, and getting the ball in bucket number six.
Did you ever play the game?
No, I did not, but I was traumatized. You know, I was always watching the show hoping that maybe like a 10, 11, or 12-year-old would be picked because I knew that the, you know, barely omniscient 2-year-old toddlers would not even get it into bucket number one, and it felt like such a waste.
He's right. There's nothing more disappointing when they would bounce that first ball and not get it in.
Right?
It's like, come on. I've been waiting all morning for this.
And there's no way you
can
look.
Whoever got picked was like representative to rob the toy bank at the Bozo Circus. So we needed an able-bodied kid. Oh, it was awful.
And it's completely wrong to scream loser at a 3-year-old.
It is.
It is. Well, you know, I was only in my own living room, so.
Oh, so you could get away with
practice.
It.
I had ping pong balls, and I would practice, you know.
You know, the constant story in Chicago is my mom put me on the waiting list, but I was number 943, and they canceled the show at 942. You know, so that's the story you hear all the time. Were you even on the waiting list?
I wasn't. No, no.
So your parents didn't like you?
My parents were divorced, so my mom did not have the free time to take me to Bozo Circus. I was a latchkey kid. I would have had to put myself on the list, get on a crosstown bus down to Wacker Drive or wherever they shot that.
Right. That's Brad killing the segment as opposed to just lying to make me feel better. Andy, were you on the list?
I actually got to see a taping of the Bozo show. I was there, fortunate enough.
Were you on the list for Bozo Buckets?
Answer
the question, damn it.
That was back in the day when the little arrows decided who he was going.
Oh, that's right.
So the little arrows were a little over my head at that point because I was too short. That's the problem.
Yeah, the little arrows were designed for the cameraman to tell him which way to zoom in to focus on the kid who's related to the guy in marketing, and then the lady,
the lady with the funny hair
for the producer. Yeah, that's how that worked.
My parents couldn't even be bothered to let us send in a postcard to be the at-home player.
And the Bozo drum.
The Bozo drum. They picked the little note card.
Were they too busy smoking and drinking like other parents?
Yeah, no, they were too realistic early on. You'll never get picked.
Breastfeeding with bourbon and Pall Malls going 100% of the time. Yeah.
Exactly.
You'll never get picked. You'll never get picked. Go outside. How's the tour?
The tour is great. We love it. We call it our full-time, part-time job. We started this as a lark almost 17 years ago, and we are still doing shows.
Colin Mockery, we were talking about this earlier, when someone has a funny head. Colin Mockery has a funny head. I don't know how I can describe it other than that. For those of you who watch Who's Line, you look at Colin Mockery and you laugh. And it's not an insulting laugh. It's just he's got a funny head. You know what I'm talking about, Brett?
Yeah, he has an unfair disadvantage in comedy against most other improvisers because he just doesn't even really have to do much, and he gets laughs, and I think it starts with the whole funny head thing. It's kind of like Usain Bolt as a runner. You look at him, you're like, of course he's going to win.
Yes, yes,
his legs are twice as long and twice as muscular as everyone else. So, yeah, I have to say clever things, and Colin just kind of shrugs his shoulders and gets a belly laugh out of the audience.
Yeah, that's true. His shoulders are funny as well, but I don't want people to confuse funny head with funny face. Funny face is one thing, and Colin has that. But a funny head means you can be funny with your entire head all the way to your shoulders.
Yeah. Well,
you might even have funny feet. He might have funny feet, funny legs.
Clever things. He just does whatever he wants. He's like being there. He's like Chauncey Gardner. He just sits there, and everybody thinks he's amazing.
By the way, that's the only Chauncey Gardner reference on the show all week. How crazy is that?
Did anybody else talk about the grand prize game this week? Anybody?
No.
I'm full of nuggets.
Brought that up.
I am like a time capsule.
Texter says, I went to the Bozo show in the mid-80s, and I remember having a raffle ticket, and they called the number one for a boy and the number one for a girl, and that's how you got to do the buckets. But as Brad points out, the fix was in, because if a hot client needed a little help for their nephew, I'm guessing they got in.
Yeah. Who doesn't want a Schwinn bicycle without having to pay for it?
I know. And some Matt's cookies.
Oh, sure. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. A crisp $100 bill.
And the endless supply of Tootsie Rolls.
We all fondly dream of it, and yet we're all still a little bitter.
Right.
Because we never got there.
Well, really, I mean, this is your own fault, because you didn't have to move to L.A. and become a star. You could have stayed here and hoped for a Bozo reunion.
Yeah, well, I mean, I left when I was 10, so by that time, I think the grand prize game was pretty much over.
Oh, don't act like it wasn't your idea to leave.
I was 10. I said, I'm tired of living where I know all my friends. Let's go somewhere else.
And that's how you get into show business, kids.
PTSD
in 10.
You lose your friends on a yearly basis, and you become basically an isolated serial killer or an entertainer. One of those two things.
A texter, I was a Girl Scout in first grade, and I quit because I hated it. And then when I was a 22-year-old, their school took the Girl Scouts with Bozo tickets, and her mom shamed her for quitting because that could have been her.
Oh, well, that's always good.
Yeah. Like when the mom shames you.
Yeah, Bozo shame.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She missed out on that lucrative career she would have gotten from being a cheerleader. You know, it's always that.
You got that going as well. All right, so here's the question I hear the most about Whose Line and about you guys on tour. Somebody's feeding you notes on the songs. There's no way you can make up the songs that quickly. And I know there's less songs in the stage show that you guys do, but there's still music. Wayne Brady
said. Oh, there's lots of music, actually. Our show, we have a new game where we do about 15 songs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the point being, and I tell people all the time, no, it's not. You don't get notes. You get the songs, and you roll with it. Is that true or untrue?
It is true, you know, and then you can see that in our live show. You know, it's not like there's someone feeding us stuff. It would be impossible for us to, because we get the audience suggestions, it would be impossible for us to, like, have every permutation of everything that could ever happen and come out of someone's mouth as a suggestion and then neatly have a bunch of stuff planned for that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, everybody improvises all day long. You have conversations with people, and they're all improvised. So it's just a funnier version of what your brain process is all day long, and people wouldn't go up to someone and go, I can't believe you answered all those questions with that other person in your conversation at the restaurant. Right. Did you plan ahead? Did you have note cards?
Right.
No, you didn't.
Right.
And, you know, it's, yeah, we're the only people whose talent is questioned by people. Like, there's somehow a trap door, a secret box.
You shady comedy types going from town to town, drifters, ne'er-do-wells, thugs, and comedians.
Oh, we're total carpetbaggers. Yeah, we are gypsies of the highest order.
Have you ever played the Genesee Theater?
We have. We've played there maybe 3 or 4 times over the years.
It's a great theater.
Yeah, it's one of our favorite haunts. I love coming back to the Chicagoland area. We're also playing in Glen Ellyn the night after at the Mechanich Arts Center.
Oh, yeah, College of DuPage, the Mechanich Arts Center. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's another great room. It's a great room for stand-up as well.
I want you to start calling it the Mechanich.
Yeah.
Yeah. You say Mechanich, I say Mechanich.
All right, so listen, I'll meet you at the Genesee Theater, and you tell Colin it's okay. I can talk to him. And then you and I and Colin will hang out, and then you'll tell me to leave.
Yeah, there's no problem, because we do have security there anyway. You know, so as long as you don't go in for, like, the big bear hug and cop a feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, you never know. He is Canadian. Colin Mockery, you know, and Brad Sherwood on stage. And I don't know if tickets are available at the Mac. Maybe they are. It's worth checking both places.
I would hope that they are.
You hope there's a few seats left. Otherwise, you spend 5 minutes on the phone with me talking about Bozo.
You know, I could talk about Bozo Circus all day long. You know, Ray Rayner's show, like, I was obsessed with ducks that could eat cornflakes out of a box my entire life.
By the way, you left at 10, but does anybody owe you money? Anybody want to call out or anything? You know, any big
no,
kids
you
town
know, I missed
nice
out
time?
On, like, all of the good things of what you do as a 20-something-year-old in Chicago. Right. I never had those formative years of barfing in a dumpster on Rush Street.
Right, right. Were you married when you left, or not so much at 10?
Yeah, no, 10. We were engaged, but we didn't pull the trigger for another 25 years. So, yeah.
Well, I met my wife when I was 5, so, you know, it's possible. But, you know, I
really? You were lifetime acquaintances.
Yeah, and the last I heard when I left, she was still there. But you know, she's got to be getting tired of me by now.
But what is she? You're her entire reality. She doesn't really know what to compare it with.
Well, no, she has cable. GenesseeTheater.com, spelled the fancy way, T-R-E, GenesseeTheater.com. If you Google up at the Mac, you'll get the Mackinac Art Center or the Mackinac or any other way you want to pronounce it at the College of DuPage. And you said that's the night after, the 14th?
Yes.
All right. Great talking to you, Brad, and keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
There you go, Brad Sherwood. I didn't know Brad was coming on tomorrow. Apparently he's coming on tomorrow as well. Those guys are very funny. Very funny. I promise you, you'll have a great time.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Get up off of that thing and dance to do you better. Get up off of that thing and dance to do. Sing it now. Get up off of that thing and dance to you feel better.
I remember when I used to get off the bus at my grandmother's house. This was her favorite song.
Nice.
I go up to the door and I'd hear this. And she had put a note outside. And smelled a little bit like whiskey, but the note said, if the house is rocking, don't come knocking. I go to the neighbor's house and I play there for a while. And then I go back and she'd make soup. I never added the soup part before. I think I'm going to keep that.
I like the soup.
Yeah, the soup is an addition.
It's funny. Just as you, before the soup comment, I thought, Andy's laughing. I'm like, he says this every time. But then.
I'm a good audience.
Then you said the soup thing, and I thought, oh, he is.
Let me tell you something.
This.
Part of my charm is to take something and drive it into the ground. It's 9:28 before we get to the bottom of the hour in headlines. Hi again, everybody at CLTV. We're going to do a contest this hour where. You were going to hold up an answer to a question. Mm-hmm. You could only see the answer if you're watching CLTV.
Yeah.
And I forgot to bring it up.
It's okay.
So hold that question.
It's
we'll
right
do
here.
That again.
Yeah, I'm going to turn this paper over in case anybody's spying on it.
Texter is going crazy on the Bozo thing. 815, I got four tickets to Bozo. My son got picked for Bozo Buckets, and I have the photogerific pimento.
That's how they always said it. That's what Bozo said. Oh, for pictures. Yeah. Yeah. You'd sit there. You'd pose with
the photogiraphic pimento.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
Did you ever try to get on Mary Vanderbilt?
Yeah. I knew my mom was not going to try. So.
Well, your mom had 48
she
kids.
Had too many
Can you imagine
too much
if she tried
on.
To bring them?
Yeah. I just pretended I was there.
The Osmonds
you
called
pretended.
Mary's mom and said, stay away from your husband for a while.
How did you pretend you were there?
I don't know.
Like
I
you just... lied to people and said you were there?
No. I went home. I just pretended.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. We practiced. We would use, Katie and I were strategic, even though we were never going. We would use Dixie cups and throw things into the Dixie cups because we thought if we got good at throwing it into small containers, we'd be really good once we got to the actual
Oh, so you actually, it was like spring training
practice.
For Bozo
yeah,
buckets.
That's good.
Yeah, I use bowls.
Bozo boot camp. 847, I was picked by the Moving Arrows. It's very hard to throw a ping pong ball into a metal bucket. I miss bucket number four.
Mm.
Which is too bad because bucket number four was a round-the-world trip on a hot air balloon. Bozo buckets, the fix was in. My husband says he played three times. Well, maybe you just use that as a way to pick
His
you up.
His mom or dad worked. They knew somebody.
Or he's a liar.
That's possible. Here's another texter. The Bozo pewter replaced the magic arrows.
The Bozo pewter.
And on it goes. Anyway, tons of texts about Bozo.
From the Allstate Skyline Studio, it's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
John Acosta and I did karaoke to this last night. Let me explain. John sang and I did this. And then I pulled my pants up a little tighter, and I went, hee-hee. That's the secret, really. I don't know if you know that.
She was more like a beauty queen from a movie scene. I said, don't mind, but what do you mean?
I had the one glove look, but it was a mitten I had in my car from the winter. David Hochberg's here. He was at the get-together last night here at the new building.
It was great.
What'd you think? Did you have a good time?
I thought it was fantastic.
What'd you really think?
I thought it was the best party I've been to
ever?
Last night. Yeah, it was the best party
ever?
I attended. Ever.
Okay.
Ever between the hours of 4:30 and 7 last night. I had a great ride home with Dave.
Yeah, what happened? I don't understand why you rode home with Dave.
Because I took the train.
Dave Bennett, we're talking about.
So I parked. I parked at the Northbrook Metro Station. I got on the train because I wasn't schlepping downtown at three o'clock. With
schlepping,
traffic.
Yiddish word, traffic.
Great word. Great word.
I chose to sit in that traffic.
Oh, there you go. Okay,
I did too. It wasn't bad.
I got on the train and I relaxed, and I'm getting off the train talking to somebody in my ear, and Dave's in the car in front of me, and who walks by? I'm like, God, that looks like Dave Bennett. So I literally almost ran into him, and he's like, hey, you know, but I'm like, Dave, I'm on the phone. I'll see you at GN. And he's like, hey, I just want to let you know, I drove and I took the train home and took the train back downtown. If you need a ride home, I'll give you a ride home. I'm like, cool. Yeah.
What did he charge you?
He charged me $47.
That seems right.
But he offered me water and some snacks.
Nice.
And some mints.
It's better than an Uber.
Yeah. He offered me mints. Very nice. They were warm because they were in his pocket. I saw Pete McMurray also, and he didn't offer me anything.
Pete McMurray has this ability to show up wherever a GN thing is going on because he works here occasionally. He just pops up. I'm not sure Pete's alive. He may be a ghost.
I think it was a hologram. I heard, hey, buddy! Around the corner, and there's Pete McMurray, and the first thing he says to me, can you get me a Diet Coke? Because he's got 13 days now before he goes to Vegas. I heard all about the Vegas countdown.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And I heard him talking about no carb diet. Uh-huh. That's a big
He's going with 10 of his meathead friends and brothers, mm-hmm. and he's got to be the most cut person. So he's on the Pete McMurray starvation diet. So there you go.
I don't understand why. I mean, it's good that he's taking care of himself, but I understand why he's got to be cut at his age.
He told me he wants to be the best looking out of all 10 of the people there. So
nobody's going to care.
Well, that's what I told him. I'm like, you think people care? I'm like, we're just glad to get up in the morning and put our underpants on. So
it's great when you get to the point where you're 50. What am I, 57?
Yeah.
You're 57 and you realize an attractive 30-year-old really doesn't need attention from you.
Right.
Because they get attention from attractive 30-year-old men.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So.
But Pete McMurray needs attention from everybody.
Yeah, so. I suppose that's true.
And he texted me, can I get a hug? I'm like, sure. Anytime you want a hug, Pete. So that was my highlight of the night was
riding with Dave and hugging Pete.
Yeah. And
you got to get out more.
And being Pete McMurray's Diet Coke runner.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a good time.
You didn't work as hard as you've worked to own your own company to have this happen.
Exactly. It was fun. No, it was a good time. We had fun meeting all the staff and everything else. And
sure.
It was a good time.
Well, you're a good partner to us, my friend. David Hochberg's here. Pearl Mortgage is the company, and Team Hochberg is the team. Is there a focus today in your world that I'll be talking about?
Yeah, just a couple of things. I like to first talk about the jackholes that think that they're special and better.
Is that a housing term, jackhole?
Yes, it's a capital J, that think they're better and special than everybody who's sitting in bumper-to-bumper traffic that could go 40 to 50 miles an hour on the shoulder. For some reason, it's okay. Okay, I don't understand that. It's been bothering me.
The people
me
that go pass on the right.
Pass on the right. Everybody's sitting in a line. Everybody's like moving
waiting
along.
In a civilized society, everybody has to play by the rules.
And this guy is doing 40 in the right-hand lane. No lights. If it was an emergency vehicle, I get it. CTA bus, Metro bus, I get it. Whatever they're called now. But it got me going this morning.
Did you jerk your car to the right, causing them to fly into a concrete abutment and catch fire?
No, but that's a great idea. I'd like to talk about three things, if it's okay.
Okay.
Bankruptcies. Talking to a ton of bankruptcies attorneys right now.
Why? Are you having problems?
No, I'm fine. But a lot of their clients who had challenges and have been in Chapter 13 bankruptcies and that want to buy homes, you could buy homes 1 year after the discharge of a Chapter 13. And what a lot of these bankruptcy attorneys don't realize is that they've got a whole database of clients who have been in Chapter 13s for 2-3 years that own homes. And if you've owned homes, we could get those borrowers, get those clients, turn them into borrowers to pay off the Chapter 13, which will in turn enable the bankruptcy attorney to get paid early. And more importantly, it enables the homeowner to get out of the Chapter 13 and most likely save money.
So is this a call out then to bankruptcy attorneys to say we ought to be working together to help people?
And for homeowners that have a Chapter 13.
To tell your bankruptcy attorney.
Right. Or just call us and we'll go to your bankruptcy attorney. Also, 2 years after a Chapter 7 discharge, FHA loans, VA loan you could get after 2 years after Chapter 7. VA loan you get 1 year after Chapter 13. FHA loan, 1 year after Chapter 13. Fannie Freddie, it's 2 years after Chapter 13, 4 years after 7. So there are a number of homeowners that are still trapped in Chapter 13s that they could use the equity of their home, because the equity of their home has improved. Get out of the Chapter 13 and really start to accelerate the improvement
of
their credit.
How do you recommend
scores.
They contact you?
It's very simple. You go to WGNDavid.com or 312-751-1333.
Okay. Item number two.
Item number two, we're having a VA seminar for all the veterans out there. One of my, a member of my team, JP Marzano, on September 20th. I'll talk about it more in September as it gets closer, but I just wanted to throw it out there. At the Old Crow Smokehouse in Chicago at 6:30, going to be talking about all the benefits of VA loans. JP's grandfather and father were both Army veterans. And he's going to be hosting this VA loan seminar. So more information to come. You want more information?
You're very generous, especially with military charities. And there's been many times where you and I have been at charitable events where you've shown me up by writing a bigger check.
Yeah.
And I always respect you for doing that. But my favorite story about you and military was when you and I were both doing an event for the charity that flies veterans to Washington to see the memorials.
Yeah. Honor Flight.
Honor Flight Chicago.
That was great.
And at Honor Flight Chicago, we're at the Bolingbrook Golf Club.
Uh-huh.
And on the first hole at the Bolingbrook Golf Club, this is before...
Irv.
Yeah, this is before Hochberg decided he'd play golf again. So at this point, he's just selling raffle tickets.
Yeah.
So it's called a shotgun start, where you're spread out around the golf course and then you rotate through. So everybody's got to pass the first tee. Hochberg's standing there with Irv. Irv could not be a better guy, but Irv, 95 now, I'm thinking.
Yeah, at the time he had to be 91.
91 then. Yeah. And literally shrinking during the day.
Yeah.
While we're talking to him, he's shrinking. But wearing his World War II uniform.
Nice.
Right. And looking great. A stud. But
purple heart, too.
And a purple heart. And a funny guy. How funny? Every cart that would pull up, Hochberg would start his pitch for raffle tickets, and Irv would go... And Hochberg would go, we don't know how long Irv's going to be around. How many tickets do you want?
We got to pay him to get Irv to Washington before he drops dead.
And Irv played all day long.
All day long. He sat there all day long. I'll tell you what. He survived the Battle of the Bulge. Did he tell you the story?
Oh, yeah. I know Irv.
Okay, he survived the battle. For all your listeners, he survived the Battle of the Bulge. He was there. They dug as deep as they could get. The Germans started shelling him. He was in a foxhole with two other guys. One to the left, one to the right. He was in the middle. After the shelling, he wakes up. The guy to the left of him is dead. The guy to the right of him is dead, and he's all chewed up. And the next thing he knows, he's got one of the sisters, the three the McGuire sisters. Mm-hmm.
I think it was the McGuire.
Yeah, sisters. One of the McGuire systems. He woke up in a hospital base camp.
And they're doing a charitable thing at the.
And
hospital.
They were walking around, and he got a kiss by one of the McGuire systems. And as of today, he's like it was the most horrifying event of his life. And he was just such a
he's a great guy,
sweet guy.
But the payoff was the hot babes of the day.
Yes.
Came in and gave him a kiss.
Yes.
By the way, there is selective hearing in that generation, as there is for all men. That same event later on in the day, around the dinner that I was emceeing, there's five or six vets, all in their 90s, and I'm talking to them, and it's small talk, and there's, what? It's 2:30. What? They can't hear. And I look at all of them, I go, you guys got some stories. Tell me about chasing the ladies in the war. They all smile. They heard everything I said from that point forward.
Exactly.
All right. Item number three.
That was item number three, the VA seminar.
That was item number two.
Sorry. Item number four, Amy Kite.
No. Item number three.
Item number one, my thing was the jackhole on the car that went 40 miles an hour.
Okay. Right. But item number three.
Right. So is Amy Kite. You've heard of her before.
I have. Sure.
Tom Keller
Williams Realty.
You might have heard of him before. MegaPros Joe and I have put together a group. We're going to be doing instant offers on homes. So you hear these companies, we'll buy your home right there. We're putting together a team. All the people that you've heard of, Amy Kite's going to, we're setting it up now. We don't have it all figured out, but within the next 2 weeks, we'll have it figured out. You're going to be able to call up any one of us. We'll get you over to Amy. Amy will be able to go to your house. She's licensed in eight counties, for God's sake.
Yeah, the whole town.
Right. And she's going to be able to make an offer on that home. A lot of people don't want to go through the home selling process. A lot of people have acquired property they don't want anymore. So we're going to be able, we've pulled our resources. We're going to be able, Amy's going to be able to make you an offer, buy it for cash. We'll have to do our due diligence. inspection and title and all that stuff. But well,
you take the hassle away.
Take it or leave it. Here's the offer. If you want to get out, here's the price, and we could close quick and all this stuff. So
and you got a team of everybody involved who can take care of all the various pieces of the story.
Right. You need kitchens and baths, and you know what? We might even be able to put Tom Jenke in the bath before we install it into your house because he likes sitting in bathtubs. You know, if you've seen a commercial, you know he's very good.
Yeah.
We have trouble getting him out of the bathtub,
yeah, sure,
but that's a whole other thing. So we got Tom.
All this is out loud. You know that.
I don't. Okay. And he doesn't listen to Gia. Okay. He's fine. You know, we got Tom with all of his stuff to fix up the house. MegaPro's Joe to fix up the house. Amy to sell the house. I'll get you pre-approved to buy the house. So it's a great little package. We all got together and we formed a little team. And
what are you going to call the company?
David Hochberg Realty. And then, no, I'm kidding. We don't know. It's going to be part of Amy's.
Hochberg's Little Helpers.
No, God forbid. No, have no name. If we need PermaSeal, we got PermaSeal. We got the garage door guy. We got to cover Mr. Floor. Whatever we need, we could get it in there, get it done, turn it back out, and sell it again quick.
Hang around a second. I want to see if you got an Andy Mazur story before we go.
Oh, yeah.
We're coming back with Bill and Wendy on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman still on vacation. He'll be back on Monday. And we're back here tomorrow. How are Bill and Wendy?
Fantastic. Turn your mic on.
There you go, buddy. Well, hold on. One more time.
And that's who killed John F. Kennedy. Don't tell anybody.
Oh, you are so funny.
There you go. That's perfect. All right. What'd you say?
I don't know.
You said we missed something.
We missed Justin Kaufman, you know.
He's not here?
No, he's not
I'm
here,
kidding.
You guys.
Yeah.
Nobody noticed but me.
Did you like last night? And David Hochberg was just mentioning this when the listener, a very lovely woman, came in. And you and Patty and Ro were there, and she came up and said, Steve Cochran, you're my favorite.
Yeah, that was
fun. In front of you guys,
was that
fun?
Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah, that was fun.
We enjoyed that a lot.
I like that part.
Nora. Her name was Nora.
Nora was great.
P1 listener. So yeah. She's probably listening right now. Took pictures of everybody, with everybody. It's great.
Well, I didn't see a camera.
She just made a clicky sound with her fingers. I don't think those are going to
work. Real?
That's not going to work.
Did you know Hochberg and Andy Mazur went to high school together?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Known him a long time.
Got an Andy Mazur story?
No, he was kind of like...
I was boring.
He was white bread, vanilla, boring. He'd be on the intercom every morning. Good morning, students.
Yeah,
good
morning,
demons.
You did?
Blue demons.
2 years I did the morning announcements.
Yeah, me too. I used to do the morning announcements and then leave school and go play golf. Good program.
That's good.
Then I'd wonder why people were upset with me.
Why your parents were getting calls, where's Steve?
At one point, I came in. You remember cut sheets?
Yeah.
Cut sheets where, I don't know if you guys had them in school, but cut sheets
for the teams,
against
right?
Against the attendance.
Yeah.
They would see that you're not in class against the attendance list, and then they'd write your name on a cut sheet. They'd leave it in a wooden box outside the door, and then you could get a detention because you were skipping school.
Oh.
So at one point, I knew the cut sheet was going to go out, and the physics teacher, who looked like a horror movie character, I snuck down the hall, and I was looking both ways, and I was sort of lurking like John Belushi before he put the ladder up on a house in Animal House. And I reached up to grab the cut sheet to get it out so I could cross my name off, and his hand grabbed my wrist.
Oh.
Like they're in the house.
Wow.
Yeah. And I would have gotten in trouble, but I made up a story.
You did? On the spot?
Good for you. I said something like there was a kidnapping involved. I don't know. There's something. Hey, if you're listening as a kid, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Be cool. Stay in school. And we'll see you tomorrow.